I gotta find a way to be a little stronger. Find a way to be better without losing me. You don't know the half of who I'm gonna be. Don't forget it, 'cause I'll be fine today without the world telling me how to be. 'Cause I'm better, and if I die today, you know I'll die being who I wanna be. Don't forget it.
Hi, listener. Thank you so much for checking out Watery Dead Show, an anime podcast so bad that it loops back around to being good. Or so we hope. Just wanted to take a minute and say that if you enjoy what you hear, you can rate and review us on iTunes, subscribe to our YouTube or SoundCloud, or follow us on Twitter at Watery Dead Show. We also have an inbox at WateryDeadShow@gmail.com if your message can't be fit into 280 characters. And we read all the messages you send and reply to them, whether they make it to air or not, because we really do love our community, which we hope you'll become a part of if you haven't already. But whether you do or not, you have our sincere thanks for listening, friend. Hope you enjoyed the show.
You don't know the half of who I'm gonna be. Don't forget it, 'cause I'll be fine today without the world telling me how to be. 'Cause I'm better, and if I...
Good evening, ladies, gentlemen, MBs, and I'm going to give you a little bit of a sing-song here. All these thoughts running through my head. Butts on fire, I'm burning red. I can't remember the rest of the lyrics, shit. I was almost there.
No.
Ruined. No. Tell how badly I fucked up the Devil Trigger cover I was going to do, but never mind. We are technically a bad anime podcast, so I suppose that's on brand for us.
Totally.
Anyway.
Cheers.
Cheers. Happy Friday, everyone. I completely fucked up the... But that way, it can only go up from here. And indeed, well, we're going to be talking about Sirens of Might Episode 4 and Episode 5 today. One of which is about a man getting murdered viciously and horrifically in the public eye. And the other is the toy-sensed episode. I am, of course, Shaden, as usual. I am, you know, the resident alcoholic of this particular stream. Joining me, as always, from across the pond is the Soul Doctor.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming out. You may or may not can tell I'm still suffering the ill effects of a cold, so apologies for sounding different / off. Emily says you're clearly pissed already, which is I don't know. Can you confirm or deny?
make that a poll. We'll leave it to the audience to decide.
Yep.
Shaden a drunken wreck?
Yes.
I mean, the bottle is mostly full. I will point out here. You can see. Mostly full. So, not yet, but we'll see how, of course, the stream progresses. I mean, when we get to discussing episode 5, a lot of this is going to be down very quickly, because I poured this one out for our boy Haruka, the poor lad, because, he did not... Haruka did nothing wrong. Make that a hashtag. Poor sweet innocent...
I know! Well, of course,
poor sweet
right?
innocent child.
So far, I mean, you never know what Ikuni will do, like... You know, it'll be revealed as this, like, evil mastermind in a couple of episodes. But, no, for now, I mean, I don't think you can, yeah. No one's saying that, right? No one's, like, saying, Haruka fucking sucks. Who's out there? Who's on that corner?
I will fight you. I will fight you in the streets. I'm just saying. Alright, so yeah, we're doing a double build today. We need to do some quick housework or housekeeping first, so, unfortunately, Vorgelia is not here today, and she's asked that she leave doing Saren Samai for the remainder of the season, just because of personal commitment she's got, which is a shame. I'm kind of glad that she's not going to be here, but we'll continue on anyway. She's not gone forever. We'll be back doing whatever we're doing for season 6, hopefully something terrible, because we keep doing good shows now. We need to get back to our roots of doing something fucking atrocious.
Well,
I'm already doing that to myself, admittedly, but that's a different...
Yeah, but for... on a grand scale. We've been doing a lot of, like, good stuff lately. And, I mean, look, there's multiple ways we could get to this point, right? Like, whenever we reach a subscriber milestone, we do something shitty.
Oh, God.
So, people out there want to push our YouTube channel, it's at like 376, 377. People mm-hmm. want to push that up to 400. We'll watch some shitty anime again because
get us up to 400 and we'll watch the Fize anime that's out at the moment.
No, I don't know about that.
Oh, look, you're not game for that. Come on.
What is it?
You're not. It's just, I don't know. It's literally just called something something Fize, and it's about girls with Fize. And I'm just like, well,
oh,
at least
right.
it's honest with itself.
That won't be. That'll just be sad. That won't be like gleeful to make fun of. That'll just be like, oh. Listen.
Yeah. Okay. To be fair, yeah.
Ravensgale, we have already done a Garzy's Wing. That's not to say that a second Garzy's Wing episode could not be possible. Look, Garzy's Wing is a deep, Bison Well is deep, and you can just gain, taking it in right now, you can just gain so much from multiple dips into the well. There's so much there for you. To think that you could take from Garzy's Wing everything it had to offer in a single viewing is, hubris. Madness!
Have you fucking heard yourself? Have you fucking heard the words coming out of your mouth? Just... Right, let's pretend that Doc didn't say that. I know it's going to be on the archive later so people can clip it and point out to me that, you know, that he did say that. But I'm just going to, you know, blast it out of my brain. Probably with more booze, to be fair. So anyway, yes, Vargelli unfortunately will not be joining us for remaining Sarenism. But we'll continue on with it as we usually do, you know, in our own thundering, plodding way. What else? Doc, do you have the polls from last time?
Oh, I can pull those up right away.
Yeah. While Doc is pulling those up, I want to say something very quickly about the polls, which is we got quite a lot of engagement with the last three that were put out. We had like 50 plus responses. So to those of you who did respond to the polls, thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to offer your thoughts on the episode. Hopefully we'll get similar engagement going forward, but it's always nice just to have people getting on it. Some people picked some particularly interesting answers. And also, one of the polls was actively disproven by episode 5.
Okay.
But we'll get to that in a moment when you bring them up.
Okay, so here they are. By the way, Shadon, do I sound... Not the cold, but just equipment-wise. Do I sound okay? Am I sounding...
Well, apart from the fact that you were suggesting you wanted to rewatch Garzy's Wing, I think you sound perfectly fine.
Okay. I'm just making sure that, like, that my actual microphone was picking me up rather than my webcam mic, which sometimes happens. Like, I feel like the first... One of our recent, so like about a month ago, did a stream accidentally into the webcam mic, and it sounded terrible. But, okay, polls. Here we go. Did you empathize with Enta's plight despite the bad things he does with regards to Kazuki? And 92%, this is the landslide of landslides, said yes, he's just flawed. And a very strict and stringent and, you know, law and order type 8% of you folks said no excuses.
I will intercede on that and just say that, like before, I think that both answers are perfectly fair depending on where your moral compass lies. There's no right or wrong on that one, even though it was overwhelmingly in one direction. So, but that's the thing I like to gauge about this kind of stuff is, you know, when we get complicated characters like this who are on an ambiguity, you know, or an ambiguous moral area, like, what do people think? You know, you come here and you listen to me mouth off for 2 hours straight. What do you guys think? Let's get that instead. So, next...
Is Azusa Sarah secretly the evil Lovecraftian overlord of the Otter Empire?
Episode 5 gave some thoughts on this. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
So, 40% says 40% say she's an evil Dishu. So, yes.
When he said says then, you were turning into, like, you know, someone from a local council estate near where I live. You were getting really, really, like, you know, common people from Britain there. Careful, dog.
That's gotta be bad.
It is.
38% say that's utterly ridiculous. And 22% say it's actually Phil, goddammit. Which I support.
Those people had the right answer.
Those are
so good on you.
Those are people that have been with us for more than one season.
Oh, I'm just waiting for Caesar Sarah just to do the, you know, hello, it's me, Phil. How about
the zipper? Yeah, it's me, Phil. Lovecraftian lizard man. Issue that there's got to be, by the way. There's got to be like an Otterman Empire joke in there somewhere, right? I mean, it must. I can see like the beginning and the end, but I can't really see how to get from.
Well, was it several hundred years long? that's how long the Ottoman Empire went for.
Exactly.
Fuck my life, that's a pun and a half. Ravensgale, just one thing I want to point out, Bo. If you're going to be cosplaying the Otacops, you've got to get the dance in. You've got to get the you know,
oh, yeah,
the stage play that they pull off. It has to happen.
So yeah. Got to learn all those lyrics. That's fun.
And I think we have one more, I believe.
One more poll. Is Haruka's paraplegia, the result of the sign falling in episode one, or has it been a lifelong issue? Here's another one that seems to have been disproven by the most recent episode. 67% said that it was the sign, and 33% said lifelong. Whether or not it's the sign, the lifelong theory, I think, has been debunked.
Yeah, it absolutely has.
Yeah. Yeah, so those are the polls.
So, thank you everyone for taking part in those. We'll have more coming up as the stream progresses and afterwards, so do keep an eye out on our Twitter. Feel free to drop your own thoughts in on that. Anyway, without further ado, let's start with episode 4. Because we're doing a double feature here today, I'm going to be carrying episode 4 on the summary. Mark will then be doing episode 5, but I'll be chipping in. I'm going to have to apologize in advance because, given the compressed nature of this, it's been kind of difficult to get both episodes rewatched in such a short amount of time. I basically came home, got my bottle of booze, got something to eat, got episode 4 rewatched, and then realized, oh shit, I'm out of time. Whoops. Yeah, that didn't go so well. So on course here, you know, for having a kind of a, you know, fudding stream, but we'll give it a go.
Okay.
So, episode 4. Episode 4 is the Tai-centered episode, because we've already had the Kazuki one and we've had the Ensa one, so naturally it makes sense. And it starts with someone being murdered. So we're off to a flying star here. Zaren Zamai, you know, don't give no fucks, he'll just do whatever. It suggests that his brother killed someone in what I presume to be a underground, like, you know, tunnel of some, I don't know what it is, what you call it.
Right.
But that's the suggestion, while Toy was younger than he is now. And that seems to have, you know, scarred him since then. Much of this episode is Toy's own flashbacks about how he came into the position he is with relation to his brother and the family situation that forced him to do the things they do.
Oh.
But that doesn't happen. Oh.
You just reminded me, actually. This episode was directed by Nobuyuki Takeuchi. I feel like it's important to point it out because it does have a little bit of a different, I mean, it's not going to deviate too much because a lot of the episode will be blocked off for the kind of the sequences that have been repeating throughout. But, like, there's some differences here, like the flashback heaviness, how long the leakage scene was, the use of music, things like that. And Takeuchi, like, worked with Ikuhara on Penguin Drum. But I think that for me, he's more famous, in my mind, for storyboarding and the first 5 episodes of Bakemonogatari and directing, being the animation director for the whole snail arc, episodes 3 through 5. Regarding the other stuff on the CV, you know, he's got the Kizu stuff. I mentioned the Penguin Drum. I was a key animator on Ponyo. I was not aware of that. But yeah, mostly have heard of this guy for his excellent work on Bakemonogatari. And I think he keeps up that tradition of excellence here. I loved how this episode was slightly, and the next one too, I think, like, sort of slightly different from what's come before.
Mm. Yeah, I want to actually point out something very quickly about the direction in the immediate scenes following the opening theme. Mm-hmm. So, recall at the end of episode 3, and yeah, I know we're kind of a bit late on this one, but of course that was the revelation that Haruka was paralyzed from the waist down. Mm-hmm. So what is the thing that is given most emphasis in the opening moments of this episode following the flashback? The wheelchair. The fact that there's a panning shot over what is essentially nothing in the family's house, but you get a it's almost sense of front, the wheelchair ramp going up one of the stairs. So mm-hmm. I really fucking like this just as a, like, you know, okay, here was the giant bombshell from the previous episode. Mm-hmm. We're not going to let you forget about that. There are going to be, you know, things to brought up about that. Right. So that was excellent. So, of course, it's the family meal in the morning, and we've got Azuma Sara, you know, doing her usual shtick. Turns out that Haruka is going to be going to a fan meet with Azusa Sara, happening immediately the day after.
Boy.
And
sorry.
Yeah. And Kazuki, of course, finds out about this, and I think... I've never known a character in fiction to have, like, dropped such a gigantic shit in one go because of how, like, you know, how screwed they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he was probably taking notes from Mrs. Doubtfire on how to handle this next, because, yeah, he's boned, basically. He's done for. One thing to note, by the way, is
is he?
Well,
we'll see.
We saw how that turned out.
Yes.
Spoilers,
but skipping ahead.
spoilers ahead, everything goes horribly wrong, as you might expect. One thing to note as well is that Kazuki is, of course, even before the fan meet was even announced or arranged, he's not going with Haruka anyway. It's Enta who's going with it.
Yep.
So, again, keep that in the back of your mind. Mm-hmm. But this is indeed Toya's sensitive episode, and the plot is progressing in the background. So we actually learn that Toya's living the Persona 5 MC lifestyle in the cafe, attic. He's living in LeBlanc, or if LeBlanc was a sober shop. By the way, Azusa Sara's selfie of the day is sober, so mm-hmm. you know, take yourself while he's sober.
Sober.
And he's having a phone call with his brother, while his brother is, of course, washing his dog and not torturing someone in the bathtub as we saw last time. Absolutely innocent, completely. And it turns out that Toy is, you know, got a gun. I want to point something out here that I'm going to say.
Beautiful CG piece.
Yes, but put a pin in that for later, because I want to talk about that in more detail. But they're essentially discussing, you know, why are you not living with me? You know, sorry I can never be by your side, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. Still very distant from each other, as we've seen the previous episodes. But it looks like that Toy, I think he's living with his uncle, I believe, or possibly his granduncle. It's not, yeah. I'm not quite sure, but mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter. It's similar. I mean, I made the P5 joke, but the relationship is kind of similar, I suppose.
I was just going to throw this out. Do you think it's going to turn out that none of the boys are living with their, like... Well, I guess Enta isn't really living with his parents either. It's his sister and his grandmother. We haven't seen whether the parents are there or not, but, like... Yeah, I guess none of the boys live with their biological parents.
Mm. Well, this is, without getting too deep into this as a talking point for later, again, like I've said in the Persona 4 stuff that we did previously, what is one of your biggest guiding, you know, influences in your life as you grow up? Your immediate parents. Mm-hmm. And to varying degrees, the kids, as we'll learn in this episode and in episode 5, particularly in relation to Kazuki, they don't have stable, like, parental figures, really, I would argue. Or if they do, especially in the case of Toy, they're not the best. They're deeply, deeply flawed individuals. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Enter's come on over and he said, he's called Toy out. And he asks him, will you give Kazuki your dish of hope? And if I ever believed Enta to be rock stupid, this was the moment that proved it, because you're asking Toy, the man who is a hardened career criminal who, you know, just, like, if I ever believed Enta to be
honestly,
rock stupid, good attempt, good attempt, because you're asking Toy. A for effort, gold star and all that. But, no such luck. But in discussing this, Toy is reminded of a discussion or a conversation he had with his brother about the idea, you know, of the weak, you know, perishing and only the strong and the bad can survive. overlaid with a shot of, you know, various people queuing up into the shop who are completely faceless, you know, building on his idea that no one gives a shit about what's happening. So he goes and broods over, you know, the riverbed, and this is the point where Kazagi turns up, dressed in his Azusa costume, out of nowhere, runs up to him, hugs him, and says, oh yeah, totally fucking kidnap boy, by the way. I mean, what kind of batshit logic do you have to be operating on to think that's a good idea on any level?
Well, first you're going to kidnap a cat. It's a slippery slope to kidnapping humans. And we talked about before, like, kind of him being willing to hurt other people or... hello, everyone, by the way. People arriving in chat. Hi, hi. Kazuki being willing to, like, hurt other people to sacrifice their happiness for, like, the happiness of his own... his own self or his own brother. I mean, and we'll drill down more into like what exactly his motivations are as we go along. But yeah, yeah. I mean, clearly, whether people like, well, let me back up. Clearly, like the show is behind that. Like, if you thought like, oh, the cat thing is just one thing, but Kazuki won't do anything really bad. It's like, no, like he's. He definitely is, like, his moral compass is operating differently than I think yours or mine may do.
It's spinning in circles, basically. Yes.
Exactly.
So, by the way, Kazuki, like, not only is he dressed up as Zutarabi, he's also actually imitating her mannerism.
Mm-hmm.
Using the D-ish at the end of it, like, you know. So they visit the sober shop, and this is the point where they get the selfie, and insert a moment in which, you know, Ty, you know, questions himself like, oh my god, am I actually cute?
He's hot. Oh yeah. Man. Toy.
So yeah.
That moment's great. When he's
that
like,
is pretty great.
Wow, he's kind of hot. Wait a minute, what am I thinking? No. Like, yeah. I love that bit.
I mean, Kazuki says to Toy, like, you know, I'll take Sarah's place after you kidnap him. And, I mean... I haven't pointed this out before, but someone else has on Twitter, and I'm going to shamelessly steal that. I mean, like, you know, properly bring this up. Kazuki's outfit is a very poor imitation of the real thing. Like, it's from a distance, if you happen to be, you know, rubbing Vaseline into your eyes, probably the same. But otherwise, there are subtle differences, not least of which is a lack of makeup as well.
That one old guy in the crowd, though. Next episode, he didn't know. That's my grandkid. Yeah. What did he say? Something like that? It's my granddaughter.
And to be fair to Haruka's like 8 or something like that. I mean, yep. Come on. You know, when you go see Father Christmas when you're that young, you can't tell that it's just a random dude in a costume. So we can forgive Haruka for that. I mean, mm-hmm. Like I say, no one gives Haruka shit in this show. Like, I won't hear it. I will not fucking hear it. But anyway, this is when we get a flashback at this point to Toy's past, where the sober shop that he lived in as a child before his parents died is now being sold, presumably due to mobster debt. And this is when his brother is properly introduced to us, and to say he leaves a crappy impression is probably a bit of an understatement, because he seems to be A, a complete arsehole, and B, running the Jordan Peterson, you know, the strong must, you know, lord over the weak playbook or some shit like that. Honestly, I got some serious fucking vibes from that made me think he's just been watching too many YouTube videos.
Are you talking about Toy's brother here?
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, you can see that.
Yeah, like the whole, like, bad people are the ones who survive. Because surviving's all that matters.
Alpha males!
I didn't read it as quite that, but
I'm joking. I'm taking this.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. If we want to talk about Toy's brother now or later, it's up to you.
Probably later, because there's more to discuss. Of
yep.
course, to give to his
okay. Action.
This scene, by the way, again talking about direction, a lot of really close, real close-ups, like movements and objects. Like Toy's brother pulls out the necklace of pearls that his mother had to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Toy himself says, I wish you died instead of them.
Whew.
I mean, he is 10, so I kind of, you know, understand that he doesn't get the implications of saying such an awful thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, suffice to say, if that was your one and only impression of their relationship, you'd think that they hated each other immensely. But as is, you know, the path, of course, for this particular show, it's more complicated. So it looks like Toy's brother is actually a part of what I'm going to presume to be, you know, a really, really, you know, low-level Yakuza gang. And I'm talking Yakuza the video game here, because they're all wearing, like, you know, seagull pattern jackets.
Yes. Yep.
And he finds a gun that was given to his brother by the leader of the gang inside the drawer. So that's his, you know, realization. Yeah.
The worst place you can hide a weapon. In the drawer of the drawer of a child.
Mm-hmm.
Chiaki, or is it his name? Yeah, Chiaki? Like
Chiaki,
what the
yes.
fuck, man? Like, it doesn't matter that you've covered it up in this handkerchief. Like, it is a gun-shaped handkerchief. Like,
congratulations.
There's, yeah. I mean, I understand the thinking, right? If you don't want, like, the, you want to put it somewhere where if your place gets turned upside down and searched by cops or whoever, you know, people won't find the gun. But in a child's fucking desk drawer, it's the, this is some dumb shit. And, yeah, it's a very dumb shit.
Indeed. So, indeed, the soba shop is being closed down. They're being evicted because of the mob debt. But then, Chiaki turns up with the absolute, you know, number one sign that your brother or person is indeed now a, you know, career criminal. A briefcase full of money.
I know. That's... Let's not question it. Let's just, you know, let's just go with it here. But yeah, no, it's great. Like,
yeah, I mean, oh, by the way, I neglect to mention this. The music that plays during the scenes between Chiaki and the Seagull gang leader, mm-hmm. the sleazy film noir jazz. Oh, loved it.
Yeah.
That's my shit right there.
It's good.
And it's not sober, but I will lap it up all the same.
He's also got the deed to the shop now.
Mm-hmm.
That he... Like, that was... Man, that's when it starts to turn your impression of him, at least a little bit, because mm-hmm. you can see that he's not just a heartless, you know, criminal, like what his brother said about loving the shop and all the memories there with his parents, like, and how much it meant to him, like, seeing that affected Chiaki, and so he took his, you know, ill-earned, ill-gotten fortune and bought the shop and gave it to his relatives, and so, like, yeah, I mean, just be like, wow, like, Oda, like, he really cares about his brother here.
Mm-hmm. So, after all that, we cut back, of course, to Kazuki and Toy discussing the kidnapping plan, including making a little map with counters on it, and I'm like, well, I guess Kazuki will be a great dungeon master later in life if he ever wants to, you know, take that up as a pastime.
It is a detailed map.
It is. But that's the point when Kazuki's bowl of soba flies away. And because the kids are not rock stupid, and this is a small detail I really liked, Toy immediately clocks on that a Kappa zombie is about. Which, of course, leads us to cut straight to the Otacops. Ah, man. So, we've got Mr. Sober of the Sober Shop who's been murdered. I'm not yes. even joking, that's literally his fucking yeah. name.
Yes.
Like, yeah, and Nobody's what was his comes. Crime? What was his crime, as it turns out? And as I was watching this, I was like, nope, I'm good. It turns out this gentleman was siphoning away the second-hand bathwater of female clients to his soba shop. Yukinon gets it. This is the... I mean, I don't know if you're in on the lore here, Doc, but if you happen to know of the game Undernight Inbirth, there's been some very thirsty mm-hmm. people who've been making comments about bathwater with regards to the female characters from that game, particularly Yuzuhira. So insert your own degenerate Eunice Blair joke here. They're all good.
Are there scenes of Yuzu, like, in the bath in the game or something?
Sadly, no, but if that was the case, I can guarantee you it would have been the best-selling fighting game of the past 20 years. Because people are that fucking thirsty.
Well, listen, I mean, Yuzu's a lovely character. But I do not know about the lore, the bathwater lore. I'll have to often.
No, you're good. You're fine.
Gosh. Yukinon, should I look into this?
Don't tell us now in the chat. He'll lead you astray. Trust your longtime podcast friend. So, indeed, of course, Mr. Sober has been turned into a Kappa zombie. And Toy, Kazuki, and Enter visit Kepi. And there's a shot on the TV that comes out of Kepi's body of Toy's Sober Shop, where they're closing up because of what's been happening. Question for you, very quickly, not a real talking point. Okay. Do you reckon Kepi showed him that deliberately because he knew Toy was there? Seems a bit coincidental that turned up out of nowhere.
It's an interesting one. Probably. Mm. I mean, I'm starting to think so.
Well, given what happens in episode 5.
So Tallulah Bell has an interesting question in chat, by the way. Anyone realize that they defeat the Kappa zombies by kink shaming them? Is that how it appears or reads to you?
I think that the crimes that the various people have made thus far, like the varying degrees, like the Bath War one is pretty bad. Don't get me wrong, that's pretty fucking bad. There's no real way around that.
It's definitely unique.
it is. But I think it's just a case of, kink shaming is built on the idea of, getting something that wants to be kept secret out there. So I would argue yes, but I think that, if they were not as outrageous as they were, they would probably work the same way.
Yeah, like, that's an interesting way to parse the situations. Like, it doesn't really seem like that's kind of like the first order of what they're trying to do. You know what I mean? They're not like, it's a joke. Well, but no, I think it's interesting because like they do end up feeling ashamed, but just because their secret's out. But yeah, okay.
Well, you should be a fighter game player because you're excellent at doing baits.
You got me good there. Yep, there's not. I'm really bad at I'm very bad at deciphering tone from text. This is a problem in my life in general that leads into some bad situations.
To answer Yuki's question, you want my opinion on that? Like, it's one of those things where I won't necessarily understand it or get it myself as something, it'll feel very alien to me. But that doesn't mean that you can't, if you're cool with it, you do whatever, kinky stuff you want to do, that's fine. Doesn't bother me or bar me in any other way. You're not siphoning away my bath war. Because I don't have a bath, that's why. Ha! Take that!
Yeah, I'm not really a bath taker. I'm more of a shower person. The bath seems... I don't know. At a certain point, you're just kind of laying in water that seems less than ideal.
Mm-hmm. on the plot then, Toy, as soon as he sees that, his family's sober shop is, being affected by this, mm-hmm. he, like entering the last episode, again, saying no at this, turns to Kepi and says, right, make me into a Kappa. Let's go.
He grabs his lips. right there. Do it. And we get to see just how high Kepi is because his eyes are so fucking red. Just absurdly red.
Oh, man. I'll put on Kickstarter sofa.
Hashtag buy Shadana bath. Oh, yes.
If you buy me a bath, I'll do all my podcasts while I'm in there, which means we'll let no viewers after that.
It'll be sort of Gundam Wing-esque, like your trays doing a podcast from the bath, with bubbles, of course, strategically covering your dangly bits.
God, are we doing a Sirens of My Moment right now? We're getting this shit out in the open, expectedly.
Yep.
Emily has the right idea, though. Anyway, so, Kappa Zombie Fight, usual stuff. It's Toy leading the charge on this one and doing the song, though, so that's your difference there. Mm-hmm. And they, of course, win. And then we cut to the inevitable leak. So, what was the leak? What was the leak that happened in this episode? To abridge it, it turns out that Chiaki actually got the money for the sober shop from the Seagull boss guy. And, boss guy, says, right, I'm going to find him. I'm going to get my money back from him. Toy overhears this because he's trying to find his brother because he's wandering all night. I mean, he's a 10-year-old kid or however old he is at the time. Mm-hmm. I can kind of get that.
Did you notice the boss guy had no eyebrows? That was very distracting to me. Extremely.
Also, his colleague is constantly making seagull noises and seagull poses.
Yeah, I didn't actually notice that. I'll have to go back. But, like, yeah, I was just like, you know, it's very Super Saiyan 3 sort of deal with, like, just no eyebrows along. It was very distracting. Anyway, please continue.
He's very into it. What can I say? But, yeah, this is... But, obviously, you know, Toy, 10-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Like, he's had rows with his brother, quite severe ones, but he still loves him, still cares for him. But, you know, being a 10-year-old, he can express that love, but he doesn't know what way to express it well. So what does he do? He goes back, grabs the gun, finds Seagull Man underneath this subway, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Shoots him. Dead. That was the flashback we had at the start of the episode. Put a pin in that, by the way, for a talking point later, then how we got kind of a little bit more at the start, but then more here, and I'm going to talk about that later on. So, I obviously don't know how, like, you know, powerful or influential the Seagull Gang is. I'd hope that they would have a better, you know, logo or name than simply being called the Seagulls. I mean, do they flock off? You know, I don't fucking know.
Hey, I have a question. Why do seagulls live by the sea?
Is this going to make me drink this? Is the answer to this going to make me down this in one go?
No. No, of course not.
Hit me.
Because if they live by the bay, they'd be bagels. Bagels. Get it?
Oh, no, I do. I do. Thanks for that, Doc. Right, okay. So, having survived the mental anguish of that particular moment...
It was bad.
Sorry. It was fucking atrocious, mate. The follow-up from this is that Jackie actually turns up and takes the gun from Toy and shoots the guy again. Now, whether or not he's already dead before he shoots him, or he is dead after the fact, we don't know. But here's what comes of this. It turns out that Shaki, he says to him, "I'm the guy who killed him with this gun. Brothers are going to
shoot him again." Like,
he did, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he shot him twice.
Uh huh.
And here's the thing, right? That gesture, Jackie is actually taking the heat for the murder of that guy. Mm-hmm. Because even though Toy is like 10 and he was scared for his fucking life, do you really think hardened criminals are going to care about that? They'll kill him dead.
Yeah.
And there's no way he can look after himself, whereas at least you get the impression, Jackie, that he is somewhat street smart.
And you got to hope to like rewrite his memory in a way in the trauma. Mm. Like, you know, when everything is still so fresh and open and he's totally vulnerable and might not even realize what happened. You should run up there. I did it. It was me. Remember it. Imprint this on your brain. This is how I'm going to live
Spartacus.
Our life. Yes. Yes. And that's how, like, that's how it's going to be. That perception is going to be the reality under which we live.
Mm. Indeed. So, obviously, bear in mind that this leak has been broadcast to both Kazuki and Ensa, so they know about that. Mm-hmm. So once they return from the Field of Desire, this was really weird to me. Ensa's all on this. He's like, fucking kill the guy, man. Oh my god. And Kazuki's just gnawing on a cucumber. What, is everyone he knows a murderer? Is that why this is so, like, you know, off-base for him?
We'll get to this point at the beginning of the next episode. I think.
Yeah. So they end up a silver dish. Enter's losing his shit over this. And Toy says to him, "If you let the secret out, I'll fucking end you." Yeah.
Yeah.
After entering blade mode to, you know, properly slice up all the various cucumbers with his ruler. And that's the end of the episode. Until the post credit stinger.
Fucking A, man. This was a stinger. This was something.
I mean, I do like how, you know, Ikuhara at this point seems to have mastered the art of, you know, punching you in the balls, mm-hmm. like, after the closing credits with, like, wait, they said what? They said what? Excuse me? So, like, Tobias had enough. He's going home because he's, like, done with this shit. He's done his bit for the evening. Kazuki comes after him and actually gives him his silver dish of hope that he got previously, which is in stark contrast to what Enzo was saying earlier in the episode, like, give it him. And he was just willing to give it away for free.
Did he take it? I can't remember. I know he offered it to him. I can't remember if he took it or not.
I don't know.
Okay.
But it does. But the key point here is that, you know, when Toy questions, Kazuki says, oh, I hate Haruka. And I'm like, wait, what? Do you want to repeat that again, Kazuki? Do you want to, you know, mouth those words again? Do you want to try one more time? What a wanker.
That's what you come away with. Well, yeah, I mean, defend Haruka, right? I mean...
Anyway, so that's episode 4. I want to connect, but you're so far away. Woofed. I mean, all of the character-centric episodes have been quite something, but this one was like... I'll save it for the talking points, but suffice to say, like, that was quite the thing again. And now we're going to go on to episode 5.
Yeah, okay, all right. So I was going to ask you, do you want to do summary, and then lump all the discussion together? I think that would make sense.
That would make sense, because inevitably, if we start talking about, like, stuff from episode 4 in isolation, it will then, you know, not make sense when we get to episode 5. We can't do, like, the week-on-week thing this time around, because, well, we have the knowledge of episode 5 in our
heads. Exactly. Okay, well, we'll try to wing this episode 5 summary after a brief break. Or, I need to take a brief break. Do you want to, like... start it, or should we just break and then come back in a second?
I'll crack on.
Okay, alright, I will return momentarily.
Okay, so episode 5, I want to connect but I can't be forgiven. Here's the thing. The opening of this episode reveals to us the, you know, history of Kazuki's family. Or at least part of it. Shows Haruka being born, and it then has Kazuki's grandfather dying and saying, your mother was a sloppy woman. Now, what he ultimately means by that, be it that Kazuki's mother, you know, had an affair, or potentially, you know, committed the incredibly heinous crime of not washing the dishes correctly, which in the world of Sirens and Maya, I imagine, would be, you know, a pluggable offense. We don't know. We don't. But that's a kind of a cruel thing to drop on him before, you know, he passes away. But that made him realize, or at least think, that his family, you know, Haruka's parents specifically, were not his parents in turn, biologically. We'll pin that for later because that's going to be the big theme for this episode. By the way, nice contrasting show in here, you know, the fact that, the wheelchair ramp is up there and that Haruka is walking, so... you can obviously piece together at this point the fact that he was fine and then later something happened. What that is, we don't know yet, but we will find out in due course. So, I'm sketching this from memory because, again, I didn't have time to rewatch this bit. But they do indeed put the plan in action in this episode where they, you know, decide that they are going to kidnap Azusa Sara in advance of, you know, the actual fan meetup. And they do indeed follow it through from what they discussed in episode 4, which is, first off, we've got to deal with the manager. So, taking inspiration from what I think is Payday 2, based on the fact that he's wearing a Kappa face mask, Toy ambushes him in the toilet, ties him up, takes his pants, not quite sure why, but who cares.
That is a great question. Like, why take the pants? Because he didn't put the pants on. Is it because they had some kind of, like, penguin drum, like, symbol on them, and them flying away was, like, a reference? I don't really know. It looked like they had the pink penguin on them.
He also puts a cucumber in his mouth for some reason. Again, could not tell you. So anyway, we cut to Azuma Sara, you know, browsing through what I think is her own kind of pornography, given it's all cucumbers.
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. The safest unsafe Google image search.
Man, I wouldn't like to know what Pornhub have got as far as, you know, cooking cucumbers goes. But anyway,
Smooth or lumpy? That's one of the forks in the category road for sure.
So, Tai turns up at Azusa's dressing room and takes her away. And at this point, Kazuki's there to, you know, take her place at the actual at the dressing room waiting for the actual fan meet. This is the point where he gets a message from Haruka, because again, it's got a direct line. And Haruka comes up with a secret phrase, you know, that he apparently has been discussing previously. Which, since I've got the frame of the actual scene here, right up, very convenient, says, from the beginning to the end, just waiting for it to play us the next bit, we're connected in a big circle. Big pin in that, because that's going to come full circle in a big way. Because Kazuki like has a kind of reaction to it, and you might wonder why. We will indeed find out. So, this next bit of the episode that followed, I really liked.
Holy shit. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, and I might be jumping the gun. You go ahead.
So, obviously, Haruka and Enter in line at the fan meet. Haruka being his usual adorable self. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, protect this precious child. Today's selfie item, by the way, is...
Sachet.
Not the thing you find in pot noodles, but actually smelt. You know, like, scent sachets. So, what follows after this is...
I think now we have, unless there's some clever, something clever that happens, I feel like we've discovered now that the selfie item of the day must be two syllables, because it has to be used in the song, you know, soba soba, kisu kisu, sashay sashay, like, to back up the lead Kappa vocalist.
Well, there's your evidence as well that, you know, maybe Azusa Sarah is evil or not on the level because of the fact that it's her dictating the items they're then seized on by the otters.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, we of course get the other cops dealing with their latest one, who's a gentleman who stealing scent sachets from women specifically, I think Liz will find out from Fee. Because Ikuhara has decided to, you know, just play, you know, the bingo card of strange fetishes. And he's going for the full house. Toi doesn't kidnap Azusa Sarah. But, something I predicted that turned out to be true. Azusa Sarah is not who she appears to be. She is Kappa. Or at least a Kappa in the same sense as Kepi is a Kappa. And that allows us to escape from all the various, you know, tricks that Toi tries to pull on her. Including the Metal Gear Solid locker trick, does not work.
That's adorable, like, wiggle out from under the door every time. It's amazing.
Yep. I escaped, Tish. Easy.
I'm not in there anymore.
Including a wonderful insert scene that is utterly unnecessary to the plot. Makes no sense if you think about it, but I found really, really funny. Which is that Toi puts her in a fucking magician's box and stabs it with swords.
I mean, just...
It makes no sense in context. Not a shred of it. But I laughed my ass off at this because it was genuinely funny. I only wish they'd follow it up with him doing something like, you know, tying a concrete block to her legs and throwing her in the sea. And he's just there like, oh, finally. She just taps on the shoulder and goes, skates again.
Yeah. Very Looney Tunes.
Like, or as I said on Twitter, firing her into the sun and she's just sat there, you know, at Capcom. Just enjoying yourself.
That was a great scene.
It was great. Completely unnecessary to the plot, but fun. And fun is what we need, because if you have any sort of precognitive ability or a general sense of, you know, impending doom, you can probably see where this is going. So, Enta recognizes that Kazuki is there posing as Sarah-chan. But, because Toi, you know, learned all of his, you know, rope tying tricks from, you know, Dick Dastardly and didn't actually do a proper job of it, the manager escapes.
Oh my god.
Gets back into the, you know, the meeting hall where they all are and says, objection! Wait, no, sorry, wrong thing. I meant to say, he says, that Sarah is an imposter. And
I'm like, it's just this escalating fucking, like, sorry, I accidentally pressed a button on my keyboard that made something happen. It's this escalating tension in this scene of, like, more and more, like, it goes from, like, awkward to tense to, like, I feel oppressed by the very air in the room. I have to, like, walk around or, like, walk outside to get fresh air and breathe because, like, what is happening? Like, it's, like, and it's just the first part, the manager coming in there and disputing it.
Yeah.
Is just
Ikuhara,
the beginning.
By the way, he turns this up to 11 with a flashback scene in which we get to see Haruka and Kazuki when they were much younger, while Haruka's still walking, at a park. And do you remember that thing that I said about, you know, being connected in a circle from beginning to end?
Mm-hmm.
Haruka says that to Kazuki.
Yep.
It's the phrase that they already have, or have come up in the past. And as
that's
I was watching,
that's what took him off guard, right? When he saw it
yeah.
in the Line app or whatever.
And as I was unraveling the layers of this fuckery, this absolute, oh my god, I was like, oh, it's not enough booze in my booze to talk about this. I'm just going to say that. I mean, holy shit! By the way, nice touch. When they're having this scene, there is indeed a metal framework of the park with a circle on it.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case you didn't catch on to that. But, yeah. So, of course, manager comes in, and Haruka doesn't believe him at first, because, you know, Haruka, like I said, Santa Claus, so, you know, when you're young, you don't. But then, the curtains fall, and Azusa Sara returns.
And then you're just like, fucking A, get the fuck out of there before what happens next happens.
Yeah.
Ah!
Yeah.
Oh my god. It was so painful, dude. It was really, it was tough.
And Haruka even says to the real Azusa Sara, she walks up, like, the actual phrase, and Azusa Sara just goes,
"Who are you?" Like, oh, oh, god, who are you? I mean, like, we have a special bond. We've been texting. We're like, great friends. We have this phrase, "Who are you?" Damn. Ice
bomb
cold.
Screws. Bomb God. Screws this entire scene. So Kazuki's wig falls off and he makes...
Oh, that's the part! The wig falling off is the part where it's just like, where I just had to leave. It's like, nope, I feel too naked. I feel too vulnerable, like, vicariously for this character, so I have to go. Like, I literally, it was true that I could not take it, and I mean, this happens sometimes to me when watching stuff, like, it just got so wrapped up in it. And I mean, kudos to the show for creating that kind of emotional moment. That
can,
because...
I also add,
yeah,
like, when it comes to fiction, like, you obviously as an author want to build up to big events or big moments. These can be twists, they can be reveals, they can be moments of triumph, moments of failure, you name it. So if I, up to episode 5, was asked, when do you think Haruka's going to find out that Kazuki is actually cosplaying as Azusa Sara? Mm-hmm. I just said, well, closing 5 minutes of the final episode.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, Haruka will say, I knew all along, or it's okay, Oni-chan, you know, you get where I'm going with this.
Or it'll be on, well, I thought it was going to be on Kazu's terms, you know what I mean? Like, Kazu mm-hmm. would come, wig in hand, like, framing the discussion, framing the terms of the engagement. No.
Yep.
All the control is taken away from him, and he's just...
That's why
totally
I said he got
fucked.
Murdered in public.
Yeah!
Yeah. Yep. So, props to Ikuhara.
Man.
The absolute madman. He did me over with this. This was a tough watch, and I'm not talking about it because it was bad. I'm talking because it's great drama.
Yep.
But often great drama comes with, you know, the cost of, you know, actually dealing with the pain of, you know, emphasizing and sympathizing with the characters. So, yeah. And as Yukinon has rightly just pointed out in chat, Haruka tries to call after Kazuki as he runs away.
Yep.
I'm just still like,
he's
right.
Still, yeah. Still, of course, loves him. You know? And, I mean, that kid is so pure. Like, he will, like... They could be fine tomorrow, I guess, in terms of the way Haruka relates to Kazuki. I mean, Kazuki's got a lot of things he's got to untangle inside himself to
not least of which
start
is
to approach that. God damn it. Oh, I don't even remember what's going on now. But yeah, like, Haru calling after him was, that was an emotional moment. The mm-hmm. one and only one person in the whole world, right, that would do that for him at that moment. Like, I actually want to be around you. Don't go, you know. And I mean, I guess I don't know if you're Kazuki. Maybe that makes you want to sink into the ground like a million times more. Maybe you just feel that much more mortified. I don't know, man.
I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine what it would be like to be in that situation. But I can at least talk about what happens next, which is that the scent sachets that we mentioned earlier start floating away. So obviously, Kappa Zombie's back in town. And Kazuki runs to Kepi's shrine, and the others follow. Toi delivering some, you know, cold hard truths in here. Ensa decides to pick a fight, or what is almost a fight, with Toi, which, you know, that's like trying to bareback a crocodile.
Come on, Ensa. Come on. Yeah.
I mean, you need balls to do it, but it doesn't mean you're going to be able to follow through on it. But again, gold star, you know, you get a nice certificate for good shit.
Let go of the man's clothing.
So, indeed. But Toy is right. Like, how long could you indeed keep this a secret? I mean, that was the thing I was asking of the show, funnily enough. How long will this be a secret?
Yeah.
Kazuki is, like, very emotional about all of this. Like, he's saying, like, you know, I've hurt Haruka. But this is the point, and I want to make special note of this. Now, recall the past three episodes. Kazuki, Ensa, and Toi in turn all say to Kepi, I want you to make me a kappa when things go to pot in those particular episodes.
Right.
The three of them are having a very, like, heated emotional argument about all the shit they've been through. And Kepi, without being prompted, says that he's going to just turn them into kappas there and then. They don't get to prompt him to do that this time around. They don't get to say to him, right, make me a kappa to solve something. They just came there to talk, ostensibly. So again, Kepi, potential colossal dick. I'll leave that to your, you know, you two guys to decide. So, they of course get the kappa zombie again, which is the deuce and its stealing sachets. Turns out this kappa zombie once defeated had a foot fetish because of course. I mean, again, I'm not going to judge people who might be into that kind of thing, but I'm just seriously thinking that Ikuhara is just like, you know, types in, you know, wax up shit in Urban Dictionary and is just using that to fill out the, you know, like the issues of the day. So next thing that happens, of course, is the leak that, and this time it's Kazuki is doing. But things are slightly different this time around, we learn. What we realize is that, and again, just refresh memory, so apologies here, Kazuki actually met who he believes to be his biological mother. Now, there isn't any concrete evidence of this in the episode, but we'll just go with that. Based on the smell again, the scent sachet. Apparently, Haruka had a scent sachet of his mother. How that happened, we don't know. We can work on that later. But because he flat out can't handle this secret being leaked out, they fail. The desire to extract it from the Kappa zombie, you know, decides to, you know, evacuate Kazuki's Kappa backside in the same way that drugs evacuate someone when they're being cavity searched in an airport.
Yep. Goes back. The toothpaste was put back in the tube.
Yep. And resultantly, the Kappa zombie, you know, goes back, returns to life. They get returned out of the field of desire. And, well, there's a kettle boiling, which is probably the best visual metaphor you would have for what's happening right now.
Kepi's so mad.
Kepi is fucking pissed. But again, call it what you want. Maybe he is actually a colossal prick. Because he says, I'm not going to turn you back into human form.
Right.
Yep. He's going to leave him as Kappa. Great. And for two of the three people there, that's a bad thing. Although for Kazuki, he's probably okay with that.
Yeah, he doesn't care right now.
You know, because speaking of someone who has had, you know, things happen to me in my life where I felt very embarrassed or ashamed, avoidance is a, you know, big thing. You know, you don't want to, you know, get involved or, you know, with the people that, you know, you're having an issue with at that time. You feel very, you have to keep this distance between them. What more distance can you get than by looking completely different than you would in human life?
Right.
You know? So Kazuki is discussing stuff with his biological mother, or what we presume to be his biological mother. This is all based on feelings and not on facts. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But again, we'll allow the show to, you know, reveal that to us in time.
The anti-Ben Shapiro approach. Okay.
Oh, man. What, running away from English conservative on right. interviews?
Yeah.
What a spineless tosser he was. Or is, rather. You know, there's
so
no past tense.
Speaking of people who are mad, he's very mad. Hmm.
Anyway, so Kazuki eventually decides, because he's of course grown up, like this is like pretty much close to the timeline that the show is running in, that he has a family who's more real than his biological, which is of course Haruka and his two parents, whose names we don't even know. Put a pin in that, by the way, because that'll be relevant for a criticism, believe it or not, I have of Saren Zamai. I know, well, that's it. Doc's writing out, you know, my severance package right now.
Yep.
He's writing my P45, like, you're not allowed to be on this podcast anymore for saying you don't like one element of this particular show. But anyway, so...
Suspended without pay.
Well, you know. And here comes the scene that, as soon as it started with the fact that, you know, we get to see a repeat of the very bit of opening bit of episode one with him running down with, you know, the Sangha. The fact that I remember that I'm quite proud of.
So yeah, there you go. I had forgotten, so good on you.
You can pay for this. And Haruka is running after him as he's running somewhere. It looks like, as we learn from the following scenes, that he's trying to catch up with his mother before she takes the train back to elsewhere.
Yeah.
And, well...
Yeah, did
I'll
he...
say that...
Oh, go ahead, I don't want to interrupt.
Sorry, go on.
No, go on. I was just going to ask, like, it's... I mean, there's a lot of holes in this scene, and, like, motivations for what happens during this flashback haven't really been interrogated very much. So, but I guess it's reasonable to assume right now that Kazu, even though in person with his mother, and I agree with Tula LaBelle, we can just sort of go on, like, let's just go for now with the fact that she's his mom, right?
Yeah.
They've somehow managed to meet, and they both... think this is the case.
Even if that's not necessarily objectively true, the fact that he thinks that is enough.
Yep.
That's the thing I've said before, like, characters can be objectively wrong in the show's own diegetic, like, you know, construction.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that, you know, that what they feel is wrong. Like, how many times can people speak in their own lives where they've been wrong about things they've done?
Right.
But, you know, that doesn't mean we still don't do things because of that. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's totally cool. But...
So what I was going to ask... The thing I was going to ask you, though, is, like... Or just posit, I guess, is that, like... I think we're supposed to assume that even though he told her, you know, when they were talking face-to-face at the park, like, look, you know, I appreciate it, but I have this other family with a person who's important to me, then I guess he changed his mind? And he was going to catch the train with her, or he at least wanted to talk to her again, or have some more time. It's hard to say, because he didn't really tell, because when Haru approaches him, he's not saying, like, I'm going to leave. You know, I mean, he didn't definitely say he was going to leave. So, I mean, maybe he was just there to see her off, or maybe he was there to go with her. It's, I don't think we know for sure yet.
It'll be immaterial, as it turns out, because something else happens in the meantime. So, here's the thing, folks, right? Maybe you can all relate to me on this, but, like, have you ever watched a show? And having watched a lot of media in your life, be it films, anime, television series, or reading books, playing video games, all sorts of things, that you start to get a sense for how things are going to play out next. And you wish you were blindly ignorant, or blissfully ignorant, of the fact that you can tell what's going to come next, and you know it's going to be awful, and you know it's going to make you feel bad, but you have to press on anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because the moment that Kazuki and Haruka catch up and they start talking to each other, and Kazuki crosses the road with a green blinking man sign, and as he's crossing, I have to pause the episode because I'm like, right, that's it. This is the moment, isn't it? This is when it happens. This is when it fucking happens. And, well, you know, I might not know what I'm talking about half the time, but I was indeed correct. This is the point in which Haruka is hit by a car and is paralyzed. And Ikahara, or whoever directs this episode, or whoever storyboarded it, like, you might expect, oh, it's just tasteful, like, you know, you get to see Haruka, like, knocks out cold on his face. No, we get to see that his legs are completely bloodied and bruised, and it's just all... And I'm like... and I'm here like this.
Yeah.
Ugh. Oh, fuck me. Like...
Yeah. And I think it's okay, like, that the beats can be predictable. And
well, that's the
we
thing,
still
like...
get to see them, like, because that... That helps us kind of inhabit the mind space of the characters, you know, seeing it play out.
Mm-hmm. So, Kazuki, the poor kid, like, I mean, yeah, he's done some stupid shit, but even I felt for him on this one.
Yeah.
Like, hell, Doc, if you want to put this up as a poll, like, you can argue many ways, like, who's to blame for this?
Oh, I think no one.
Well... That's the thing, like, you know, we can say, like, you know, no one was to blame except maybe the person driving the vehicle or the car or whatever it was.
Except for parents letting the... No, I'm just kidding. I know. You. So, but some people may be thinking, like, oh, why is a child this young walking around on his own? It's much more common in that society for that sort of thing to happen. So I think that's not as big of a deal. Haru, or any child of that age, is going to be probably kind of more responsible and aware of, despite what happened in the scene, in a general sense, responsible and aware of things like traffic. Mm-hmm. You know,
because
child from somewhere else might be.
But here's the thing, like, we can, of course, argue the toss about who's right and who's at fault here.
Yeah.
But that's immaterial relative to how Kazuki feels, because he says, you know, he can't breathe every time he sees Haruka in a wheelchair. And that gives some more context to his actions. Yeah. Because, after all, you know, keeping distance between some... Like I said before, the idea of him now being a capper and probably being happy with that, because it means he doesn't have to go face Haruka again looking as he does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe his actions... in doing the whole Azusa Sarah thing, are his way of putting a smoke screen or a shield or a filter up between him and Haruka.
Totally.
That allows him to operate on a level that he's comfortable with.
Totally.
It, and again, layers of complexity. We're building on this as we go along, as things are unveiled, as, you know, the show starts dealing its hand out. And it's awful. It's... Oh, man. And fucking Kepi's drinking tea while he's doing this. Break, so up yours, Kepi. Smash that dish over your head. But anyway, that's the episode. But we're not quite done, of course, because we have the post-credits singer. What's the post-credits singer about? It's about our two favourite, you know, Otacop straight out of what could have otherwise been the anime version of The Naked Gun. It is Ryo and Mabu. And they're discussing how they've been successful. But this is the point where we see, was it Ryo, the one with the actual key?
I can't remember which one's which. But I just know they're the two names. I've got the two names down. But yeah, he gets upset with the professorial looking one.
Yeah. Because he's upset, you know, about prioritizing personal feelings and all that.
Yeah.
So even these two, you know, in their very rigid, very structured way they've been presented to us of doing the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Even they're breaking loose. But yeah, that's the end of episode 5, where the shit categorically hits the free country on the planet.
Man. Okay.
And it punched me right in the fucking soul, I swear.
So, like, there is a lot to talk about. Do you want to, like, jump around and just mix in? Or should we do 4 and then 5?
If I may ask, may we take a break briefly just for a moment?
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. Sorry, folks, but unfortunately the vodka is a green in one way but not another, and you can infer that how you wish. I'll be back momentarily.
We'll be back after this. Alright, we're back. Very brief break. Okay. Discussion.
Oof.
There's a lot. So we can mix and match, I feel like, and just kind of do it organically as we go and lump them all.
Makes most sense to me, given the fact that, you know, a lot of what we could talk about with relation to size episode will indeed play into the, you know, episode 5. Funny how things work out sometimes, you know, when we do 2 episodes in one, but that's how the cookie crumbles,
yeah,
as they say.
The first time plot elements from one episode carried over to the next one happened to be this one with the kidnapping thing. Which, holy fucking shit, I can't... Totally, why the fuck did you do it?
Like, Kazuki, why did you suggest it?
I mean, just the whole thing of... Like, yeah, I mean, Kazuki is... completely amoral. just totally, like, whatever I want, whatever's in front of me to grab hold of is the thing to do, and however I have to get there, I don't care.
Question for you on that topic, actually, come to think of it.
Okay.
He only met Toy recently through the, you know, whole Kepi situation.
Mm-hmm.
If he hadn't known Toy, what was his plan B?
That's an excellent question. I mean, I don't know if there would be, right? I mean, he's thanking his lucky stars he knows...
Yeah,
someone...
there is a plan B, and it's called Plan B, as in the B stands for butt fucks, because he ain't got shit to do.
And he's just totally screwed. And yeah, maybe he makes up some conspiracy, like, this will be a double. Me, the real Sarah, will be away because I'm sick or some bullshit. That would have been a lot safer.
Maybe he would, like, you know, lay out, like, a lot of cucumbers, like a Roadrunner-style trap, like Wile E. Coyote. Into like a pit or something? I don't know.
I haven't seen School Days. I've only heard about it.
All right, so talk points. I actually have one I want to lead off with very quickly because it's a technical one.
Go ahead.
So let's talk about bad CGI.
Yes.
Now, if you've been a long-time follower of our show, you might recall more recently that I did complain a bit in The Promised Neverland about the various scenes that were CG done. Particularly the one of Norman walking down the corridor, you know, in his, like, Green Mile moment.
Woof,
yeah. Or, alternatively, you might recall even further back when we covered Cardo, The Wrong Answer, that I mentioned that they didn't, the CG was very stiff and that they could have done some interesting things with it. So, here's the thing, right? If I were to rate, like, the general standard of CG from Japan, like, in anime, I would call it monster. Yeah. Unless you happen to be Studio Orange, in which case you people are just, you know, blood wizards or something that can conjure it out of thin air.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for Land of Lustrous, by the way.
Blood wizards!
Yeah. But here's my point, though, right? One of the things I said when we were discussing Cardo on that podcast was that they could have actually used CG to their advantage. Because when you have CG overlaid over 2D animation, it looks really unnatural.
Mm-hmm.
Looks wrong. Looks out of place. And more often than not, that happens, and that's just because they don't think about it. Now, I could be completely talking my ass at the next point, much as I would have every point I've ever done on this particular podcast, but call me crazy. Recall the gun in episode 4, and how it was CG.
Recalling.
And how it looks out of place.
Mm-hmm.
Alien. Unwelcome. Can you see how, in that particular instance, the CG being bad was either A, deliberate, you know, as in to draw attention to the fact that it was an unwelcome presence in the family home, or B, coincidental, but still serves that purpose nonetheless.
I think probably B is the more likely, but the fact that there could be a narrative reason for it is nice, and I appreciate it.
I mean, I said to you when we discussed Incardo, like, without getting too deep into Incardo's, like, you know, mythology and lore, like, that when the characters in that show or the people, you know, got attuned to the higher dimension, that, you know, they could transition from 2D to, you know, 3D to show that they are different people.
Right.
CG on its own being bad is not a question necessarily of technical fidelity. It's not a question, you know, of, like, how bad or good it looks just purely in a vacuum. if you, like, for example, have some PS2, like, you know, level looking shit on your screen, that alone does not make it bad on its own. You can even use something that looks bad as an artistic statement. And again, I don't know if Ikuhara did this deliberately or not, because it's the only CG thing that I'm aware of, with the exception of the signs.
Right.
And also the otter stage and such. But they're fine. They're acceptable. But seeing it, you know, being held in Toy's hands like that, and it just floating around almost listlessly in the air, like it, you know, had some sort of, like, you know, Half-Life 2 gravity gun shit going on with it. It really did strike me as being out of place. And it's a gun being held by a 13-year-old kid. Of course it's fucking out of place. So, yeah, that was legitimately good shit if that was intentional. And if not, it still works regardless.
The color of it was very odd. It seemed like copper-colored.
It looked like they took the model straight out of Far Cry 2. shit game, by the way. Don't play it.
Listen, don't start this discussion on this channel. That's one of the most divisive games ever made. There are some people that love... People love that shit. Like, there are some really academic, like, game studies people that love the shit out of Far Cry 2. And there's people that really hate it. So, like, I don't want to have that discussion here.
Well, see me after school, folks. I'll have a discussion with you. And I'll show you how wrong you are.
Oh, yeah, the gun wasn't CG in previous episodes. I mean, that's true to Little Bell, yeah. I don't know. It just seems very generous. I mean, I would love for it to be. I'd love for you guys to be right that they were like, well, yes, let's do it for this reason,
well,
make it look this way.
It is so dark. We, you and I have said many times that, you know, what the author ultimately intends and what the outcome is are indeed disconnected a little bit. So, I'm still happy with it regardless. Like,
right.
I mean, all we'd be giving then is just, you know, academic props to Ikuhara, but nonetheless, regardless of what was behind that decision, the effects on it from me was indeed profound.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So in episode 4, the thing that struck me, well, I won't say that there's a lot that struck me about this episode, actually, but the first thing I'll point out is how I think it's really interesting how the boys all kind of misdiagnose each other and themselves when it comes to their issues. So, like, you have in, I think it was, I can't remember if it was episode 2 or 3, but Inta is telling Toy, back off, Kazuki. Kazuki's nothing like you. And we have actually seen that, well, they actually are quite alike in that they're willing to cross moral boundaries that you, Inta, are not for the sake of their brothers.
Was Inta pulling a peanut butter gamer? There's your relevant drama for this week.
Fuck. Speaking of things that I want to bring up on this channel, fucking hell. Let's keep that whole extended universe away from us.
I will say no more than that. If you're in on it, you get one.
Yeah, yeah. And you also have, like, Toy saying to Inta, why don't you give up on Kazuki? Kazuki keeps disappointing you. Kazuki keeps letting you down. Kazuki keeps making you these promises and not coming through. Like, why don't you get wise to it? Why don't you ditch him? Whenever, like, Toy kind of can't perceive that someone outside of his situation would look at him and say, this is the way that you are relating to your own brother. Like, someone could easily say, this is a problem you have in your life, right? And Inta, of course, is just all over Toy. We said, like, you are so bad, like, you're a lawbreaker. Like, you are this awful person who's transgressed the moral boundaries, certainly by killing someone, but, like, even before the murder, like, you know, the audience, we could be like, ah, oh, you've waterboarded someone, or you do the weed and make the weed. But Inta also, when no one is looking, like, is transgressive of these other kind of boundaries that he thinks that he can rationalize to himself, like, I'll just do this. It's okay. At least in the moment. So there's a lot of parallels in how they are attributing problems that they themselves have to the other people, or just not seeing obvious things about themselves that they see in each other.
Well, they're still immature kids, and on top of that, they don't have the picture. Like, this is the audience character disconnect that I mentioned before, where, you know, we can be privy to things. We're living from that, you know, omnipresent perspective in this show. Well, I say that loosely when it comes to Saren Zamai for a very good reason. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, you know, they don't have the faculties that we do, or the knowledge we do, or the morality, the ethical, you know, knowledge or calculus, whatever you call it. Mm-hmm. So it's understandable that they do that. This actually is on something I was going to talk about with regards to what I think is actually a kind of eye-opening thing about what Saren Zamai has taught me about media in general. So buckle up for a little bit of a ramble here.
Is this one of those, like, Twitter threads where you're like, sit down, boys and girls, and it's time for Professor Shajan to talk to you about some history. Buckle up.
Man Shajan, specifically. There's no professorism here. So here's the thing, right? This is actually one of the reasons why it's good that we've covered both episode 4 and 5 at the same time on this podcast.
Okay.
Because here's the thing, right? The reveal at the end of episode 5 of what happened with Haruka is a flashback that we see, but Ensa and Toi do not, because the leak has ended at that. They've only got a partial picture. Similarly, the various things that happen with the Soba Shop with Toi in episode 4, the other characters are not privy to. And one of the key things that Saren Zamai is saying to us is that, you know, there are some things that we should talk openly about and should, you know, properly give due context to. At least if nothing else, to give other people a chance to, you know, truly understand what's going on in our lives. But considering, you know, the arc of knowledge that, sounds very pretentious, but just bear me here, how much knowledge the characters are getting versus what we're getting. The key to good drama, in my opinion, is that, you know, you build up over time to a, you know, a climax. Sexual as that sounds. You know, you start building up, you foreshadow, you let reveals come in, you have the big moment at the end, the moment, you know, where the characters are at their worst, and then they triumph. But that is antithetical to how we should operate in real life with each other, in that we should, you know, try and be open and honest as early as we are capable to do so, and, you know, solve our problems through communication that way. And I think Saren Zamai maybe realized that, because all of the stuff that happens with Toi, like, you know, where he gives all that, he doesn't give the context as to why he ended up murdering that, you know, Swan, you know, Makusa boss guy.
Yeah, Super Saiyan 3 man.
Yeah, he doesn't give the context to that. The context is something we're privy to, but the other characters are not. And I'm not ultimately excusing him murdering him. I can understand, again, this is the sympathy thing. I can understand, even I don't agree with it. But Toi doesn't provide that context then, but does to us. That's the disconnect here.
Right.
So Saren Zamai, like, in its own way, is operating on two levels where the characters should really get everything off their chest as soon as they possibly can. But the drama demands that we deliver that later on in order to give a proper payoff. And that's kind of astounding when you think about it that way. Like, how we talk to each other and how we communicate in real life, and indeed what these characters need to do, is antithetical to the actual good build-up of drama that the show has been working on.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that is interesting, actually.
I should stress, this is not criticism, by the way. This is not criticism, by the way, but just think of how this show compartmentalizes what it reveals in flashbacks versus what it reveals via the leaks and all the other elements. Yeah. There's a very deliberate thing going on here where, you know, we, the audience, get to see things that the characters are not privy to, even though they have an in-universe diegetic mechanism for seeing things they would never otherwise be privy to in the first place.
Yeah, yeah, and it's, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's very much like a, you know, we all know Iku loves the theater. It's very much like a play, right? Like, we get to see everything, but not all the actors are present for all the scenes, so they don't know. There's no, like, internal monologue. Like, everything that's presented is presented on the stage. So, yeah, no, this is interesting. Interesting thing to think about. Yeah, I mean, well, it's like, I mean, look, you're going to shoot me from across the pond, but I'm gonna darling in the Franks, right?
No, I'm okay with that.
Artificially, like, extended all of its drama by just having the characters not talk to each other, discuss issues with each other.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's done way better here. I mean, I'm not always thinking, why aren't they telling each other X, Y, and Z? These are extremely personal things that wouldn't make as much sense to talk about for no reason.
Yeah. But it's like I've said to you before, though, like, we don't naturally in real life tell each other the entirety of our inner thoughts or our own experiences or history.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Partly because we can't, because, like, I mean, I've been alive for, like, 31 plus years now. Mm-hmm. But I can't tell you every single second of that time that I've spent alive. That's impossible. And secondly, because, you know, we often feel embarrassed or reticent or unable to talk about, you know, the things we've done. So it's understandable that the kids won't necessarily, I mean, the kids as well, they don't have, like, you know, the experience of age and all that, that hardens people to that. So it's understandable they won't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, again, why I'm saying it's in kind of conflict with the whole necessity of drama.
Yeah.
And not a criticism, of course, because I think Saren Samaya, as episode 5 very clearly evidenced, he's very good at delivering, you know, gut-punching drama.
Too good! Yeah.
It just felt very, you know, apparent to me how deliberate the show is in terms of, here's a thing that we see, here's a thing that we and the other kids see.
Yeah, it's good to keep in mind going forward, I think, for sure. What did you think about Toy's sort of moral progression from tiny child who was very much like, we shouldn't do bad things, you know, upholding kind of traditional morality that was handed down to him by his parents, to kind of shifting a little bit from that, and, like, obviously he had eaten based on the money, like, that his brother had gotten. If
blood money,
it, like, whether or not the brother got the food for him and he ate it, or he got it himself, like, he'd been surviving a little bit, like, kind of broke the seal on whether stealing is always bad or not. And then go a little bit more, and you see, like, well, you know, even if you do bad stuff, something good can come out of it, and that's okay if the ends justify the means. If you get to buy the soba shop and keep everybody in business, maybe it's okay. Like, maybe Nissan is super cool because he did all this. He's, like, the best guy. And then all the way to, like, you know, it's okay to do, like, these things that a lot of people would find horrific, to, like, protect who you care about. And not even necessarily, I mean, you could argue it was self-defense, but no, like, legally it would not be seen as self-defense, you know what I mean? Because the kids sought them out.
He was scared.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the brother was not in any imminent danger, legally speaking. I mean, we all know what would have happened to him. But yeah, the kid was, Toy was a lot more proactive and felt, you know, and still feels to this day justified, it seems. Although we'll see if that, how much his resolve holds on that, you know.
Yeah. Well, he says himself, like, you know, that I will die, or rather, I'll kill you, you know, I'll kill you all to, you know, preserve my brother's secret.
Mm-hmm.
It was him that did it. Even though in its own way that actually doesn't really work, because you think if he always protects his brother, he would take the heat off him by putting the blame on himself. But, you know, that's a discussion for a different day.
Yeah.
I don't think I can really answer this, because the thing is, like, our moral compasses, like, the things that the guy does in terms of deciding what is right and wrong, changes life, our lives go on anyway. He's barely able to ride the fucking teacups at Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
This is a lot to ask him to have a decided moral framework for how he approaches the world.
Yeah,
especially given all the events he's gone through.
Mm-hmm.
But I totally understand, like, you know, on a very primal, familial level, why he idolizes his brother as he does. Because who hasn't, like, if you've had an older brother or an older sister, someone of the same gender of you, and I'm not saying that as, like, you know, dismissive of, like, you know, people who've, you know, got older sisters. I'm just saying, like, you know, in terms of, you know, same sex, like older brother, older sister, older sibling, etc.
Right.
Who hasn't looked up to them in some way or another at some point or another? I think that in the right circumstances, where you got someone like, you know, Jackie, who comes in cool and swaggering, like, you know, he's completely in control of himself. He understands the situation perfectly every single time. That you won't think to yourself, he's cool. I'm going to be like him. And I think that's part of what Toy is doing. I think he's passing himself after his brother, not just because of the fact that his brother did that thing for him, where he took the heat for him and also bought the sober shop, but just because he's impressionable and feels that's the way he should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Chiaki's principles seem to have served him adequately. They've worked for him. But, you know, will they work for Toy? Because Toy is not... Toy seems to be... How do I put this? He's kind of just inherited, like, bad people survive. And if you don't do bad things, you perish. And if you perish, you're forgotten, and that's the worst thing, because no one gives a shit about you. So the best thing you can do is be bad and survive. He's inherited all that. But, like, will that adequately serve his needs going forward? I wonder. I'm not sure.
Well, if I want to, given I've already had at least one right call out on the show, I'm going to make another. Here's the thing, right? It's all well and good to have, like, relationships that you can feel strongly about, that are, you feel are good for you.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you have to leave things behind. Sometimes, you know, it's better to burn the forest down so you can replant it, rather than let it become overgrown and, you know, decrepit, rotten. So consider all the characters that we know of. Consider, you know, Enter's obsession over Kazuki. I said before that Enter, you know, crushing on Kazuki might potentially be a thing that he gets over, because while he affirms his sexuality, it's not necessarily that he will always want that person. It'll be a building block on him coming to understand that.
That's right, right, right.
With Toy, maybe he'll recognize that his brother is not the, you know, the, how do we put it? I should know this term off the top of my head, but I don't, because I'm a moron. Basically, the inspirational
center of the
figure.
Universe.
Yeah, the inspirational figure that he is, that he can be different or better than him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, he gave him a start, certainly, and that can't be, you know, forgotten, even despite the context which occurred. He could move on and grow beyond that. And in turn with Kazuki and Haruka, like, he obviously feels a great amount of blame or self-loathing because of what happened to Haruka, which I don't understand. Like, in the issues, I'd feel exactly the same.
Yeah.
But there's a certain point which he has to, you know, go to himself. I will move on. And that's not to say that he will never interact with Haruka again, but rather that he can, as I say, burn that decrepit, rotten forest down, start fresh. Maybe that's what Siren Samaya is going for in here. That, you know, the things that we built up all this time, that, you know, the relationships we have, the status quos that we've got, should be torn down to be rebuilt as something new and something better. Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you could make that case with Enta for sure, you know, because he's longing for, you know, the golden combi of the past.
You mean the golden balls?
Yeah, exactly. He's longing for it. The golden balls, right? I love it when he put his balls on my chest. Was that like a Peter Crouch quote? I think. I love it when Beck splits his balls on my chest. Meaning he passes it to him right in the chest. But we know what it really means.
We're walking.
I think your theory would hold water in Enta's case for sure. Interesting point I thought Emily Rand made on her blog, looking at Kazuki's relationships with the other two boys in his trio, contrasting his relationship with Enta and his relationship with Toy, like the new kind of burgeoning relationship with Toy, versus Enta, and the fact that, like, you know, you might assume it'll be easier for him and Inta to get on and reveal things to each other and have, like, share moments of closeness and revelation. But it actually seems to be easy for Kazu to do that with Toy because they don't know each other. Because you don't have those, like, associations kind of weighing things down, you know what I mean?
It is absolutely true. There are people I am very close to in my own life who there are things I would not talk about. And that's not to say that I'm hiding some sort of deep dark secret where it says I'm like the Buffalo Bill of Clifton. Please don't dox me, folks. Please don't swap me. But I totally get that. Like, the closer you get to someone, like, the more you feel afraid, not necessarily of revealing something, but more the consequences of that revelation.
The risk.
Yeah. Because you've got more to lose. Like, if, you know, Kazuki reveals something to Toy, like, you know, about some of the shit he's done as a Susasara or whatever, like, he's some random. He's a dude I met through meeting a capper. I know that sounds strange. Point being, he could disassociate himself with that because it's just a random thing.
Just a bartender.
Yeah. Exactly. Just a bartender. Just a chill stingray.
Mm-hmm.
So, whereas Enter is someone he's known for a lot longer. That's why it's different. So I, again, totally get that.
Mm-hmm. And then the relationship, but I think we could talk more about Toy and Kazuki when we get to episode 5. But okay, so for 4, remind me. So I can lose the thread on very basic ideas that have been established in the show very early on because I haven't thought about it in a while or it hasn't mm-hmm. been reinforced. So the dishes. So what are they and what is their function exactly? They're wish granters?
Right. I'm going to make a prediction here. I'm going to guess that not one of the kids actually gets a wish granted after the one we saw in the first episode.
Right.
Here's the thing, right?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that's very plausible.
Here's the thing, right? I know this doesn't sound like a strange thing to bring up, as I often want to do on this particular podcast, but let's talk about Bruce Almighty for a moment of all fucking...
What the f... Okay.
No, right. Bear with me this, right? So, here's the thing, right? Bruce Almighty, fairly ear comedy with, you know, known anti-vaxxer Jim Carrey. Who gives a fuck about him? My point is, though, there was a lesson that came at the end of that from, you know, would-be God Morgan Freeman, and it's stuck with me ever since. He says this, right? Miracles are something you shouldn't pray for. Miracles are something you should make for yourself. And I found that very poignant, even as a kid. Because you can be there praying every night. You can be there, you know, gambling on the lottery, for example, need a plot point in Bruce Almighty.
Right.
You know, for money. Or you could take actual, genuine action to, you know, improve your lot. To, you know, do the things that you want to do. To make things happen. And indeed, that's the thing that happens in Bruce Almighty. So that stuck with me after the fact, and I think that might very well be the case here. Because let me ask you a question, Doc.
Okay.
If you're Haruka and you get the necessary dishes of hope, be it gold, silver, bronze, whatever. Sorry, not Haruka. I mean Kazuki.
Yeah.
To do what's necessary, to do what you want to do. What would your wish be? What would your wish be?
Oh man, if I was Kazuki, I would probably wish that
rather,
my brother could walk again. Or either that, or that I had gone with my birth mother from the beginning, and maybe that changes time such that Haruka didn't even show up to the train station or didn't have that confrontation and so didn't get pushed into that. So you could do a 2-for-1.
Yeah, indeed, that in itself could be a dilemma on how you expend that wish.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you didn't have that wish and you, you know, what do you as a viewer want Kazuki to do? Spend more time with Haruka. Actually be the brother he should be.
Yes.
That's not happening. But the thing is, the power to do that lies in Kazuki's hands, not accepting the fact that he's in a Kappa form right now, but let's just talk generally here. That power is in his hands right now. I already explained previously how he could solve that instantly by taking football again. Like, I said that he would probably drop the Azusa Sara persona and the dress up if he knew, just because they talk to each other, mm-hmm. you know, about how Haruka just wants to see him play football. The fact that they're still using the same phrase, and by the way, again, like, you know, Azusa Sara, you know, saying that same phrase, like, you know, we're a connected circle. Whoa, fuck. But that's my point. Going back to the Bruce Almighty thing, rather than wait for wishes to come true, rather than wait for these dishes of hope to come through, to come true, to become a thing, take action now. You've got all the tools in front of you to make them happen, and I'm not saying they'll be easy, I'm not saying they'll be simple, but you can do that. And maybe that's the lesson that's going to teach us in the end, similar to that. And that's why I still like that film, even though it's ultimately a kind of forgettable comedy, because it at least had a good lesson behind it.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that sort of, yeah, like, take agency in your own life, how that figures in with the Capazon boxes and the Otter Empire, like, sort of controlling everyone's desires and things like that, like, how those things mesh, if they can.
I mean, think of it this way, right? Let's just talk pure numerics here. How many episodes are there in Sirens of Might? I think there's only 10.
11. I think just 11. 11. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So Kepi's only been doling out silver dishes, and I think they've only had two or three of them so far.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So by the maths alone, not all of the kids are going to get their wishes granted by him anyway.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel more strongly about that being the thing that they realize in the end. Not least of which is also that Kepi's, like, you know, controlling colossal dick shit, but there we go.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So the reason I asked about the dishes is just to contextualize in my head. Do you think it is worth comparing the two boys offering dishes to the other, and looking at those, how they're similar, how they're different? And by the way, I think if Toy offers a silver dish to someone else, to Inta, I guess, to complete the circle, that's going to be like a huge fucking moment in the show, because he's been established as the one who will not let them go. But the other boys have, and Inta, out of like a kind of a misplace is not the right word, but he appears to like be it appears to be more selfishly motivated than Kazuki's. Kazuki, when he offers his, it just seems like the light's kind of gone out, or the flame's kind of gone down, I guess, a little bit on his desire. And he's like, wow, Toy, you've really been through some shit. Like, you need this more than I do. Were there any other differences or interesting similarities that you thought about in terms of the dish sacrifice?
About the only thing I can say is I think that it's very easy to be self-sacrificing, like, you know, I speaking of myself here, like, you know, I'd probably be like, no, you need this more than I do. How many times have you done that in your own life, for example? I'm sure the people in the audience can relate to that as well. I can understand why Toya wouldn't, because his ultimate, you know, worldview has been built on by his brother, which is, you know, the strong survive and the weak do not, and he sees that in Enter and Kazuki as being the weak ones. So I think that, like, it's just this weird relationship thing where, well, not even weird, really, but more like, you know, how things are mapped out where they feel that kind of way. Because I won't worry about it too much in terms of, like, similarities right now. But I think that it's understandable, you know, like, when we get the, you know, the whole genie and lamp thing, that maybe we don't necessarily think about ourselves firstly. Unless we do. But as Sirens of Maya has shown, because you've just talked about it, sometimes not thinking about yourself can be bad in its own way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Toy is the guy who thinks about himself all the time with his dish. You know, if he got the dishes, it'd be for him. And you're giving them to me. And if you try to argue against it, I'll cut you with a ruler. Simple as that. Enter and Kazuki are like, they're giving their dishes away for various reasons. But arguably, if they could fulfill their wishes, it would be in their benefit. And I talk about it's like if someone is looking from the outside here, in terms of, like, you know, making them better people than to keep them. So maybe the lesson here is, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, the giving away all the time, you know, being that kind of altruistic is the right way. maybe there's a middle ground.
Yeah.
In fact, this makes me think of something else. And again, it's time for Shader's obscure reference time, so buckle up, folks. Let's talk about Knights of the Old Republic 2.
While you talk about KOTOR 2, I have to step out for a brief moment, but I'll be right back. Please continue.
So, KOTOR 2. I'm not going to bore you all with details about the plot, but suffice to say, there's a moment in which your PC, your player character, meets a beggar. The beggar asks for money. Simple as that. There's nothing too complicated about it. There's nothing too out there about it. And you've got three choices. You can either give the beggar money, ignore them, or threaten them with violence. Now, if you know anything about Star Wars, you can probably guess give money is the light side. Middle is, the neutral term. And, violence is the dark side. Simple as that. But, as the events unfold, if you give money to that beggar, he gets robbed later by two different people. So it just goes to show that even then, this altruism, I'm going to do right by other people, I'm going to be self-sacrificed, I'm going to give them something that I own materially that will make their lives better, is not necessarily a good thing. It's like the old phrase of, teaching a man to fish. Like, you give a man a fish, they'll feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, and he'll feed him for a lifetime. So that's why I think in this case, Sirens of Maya is telling us, okay, these kids could do a lot of great things with these wishes if they wanted to. They're trying to give them away or trying to keep them or hoard them necessarily. But neither of these things are necessarily good in their cases. In Toy's case, I would argue it's probably best that he, disconnects from his brother, to use the terminology of the show. Because his brother, while doing the familial thing for him, taking that fall from him, and isn't he something that is quite, quite important to him? Let's, think of, all those various, fairy tale stories. Doc's just arrived, so I have to re-educate the context. So, Doc, just to pick up where we left off. So let's talk about KOTOR 2, but I'm now going to move on to fairy tale stories very quickly.
Okay.
You have read Sleeping Beauty, or at least have watched the Disney film of it, I assume. And you know the basic plot.
Maybe.
Okay, so Sleeping Beauty, kissed by Prince at the end, and they marry and they're happy ever after.
Uh-huh.
But here's the thing. Why did they do that? Because of a sense of obligation to the rescue or the person who saved them? That's not right when you examine it on paper, is it? That they should go so far to be so closely knit with that person just because they did them that thing. That doesn't mean they don't show them gratitude, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a middle ground. And so I think Toy, while obviously not doing the same thing exactly, is in a similar boat, where particularly bearing in mind that he's only a kid and doesn't have, again, the maturity of age or wisdom or experience. He feels a sense of gratitude, almost fantastical gratitude to his older brother for doing that for him. And again, not saying that he shouldn't feel some sort of gratitude at the very least, because his brother did a great thing for him.
Yeah.
Awful thing, but great thing nonetheless by taking that aid for him. Could potentially have been killed as a result. But that doesn't mean that Toy is beholden to him in a blood debt that means that he will suddenly evaporate into the mist if he doesn't do it. He has his own life to lead. And his own, personality and worlds develop.
They all three feel beholden to someone else very deeply. Mm-hmm. You've got, as you said, Toy to Chiaki. You've got Enta to Kazuki. And Kazuki to Haruka, and also to his kind of own sense of guilt. Yeah, they're just willing to transgress all these, uncrossable moral thresholds, so to speak, to preserve that relationship, to keep the facade going, to eke out a little bit more hope that something might go their way. And that was one of my next talking points too, is when does that kind of justification end? Do you know what I mean? Because you were saying, that kind of gratitude, like, what's the end of it? Like, what kind of obligation is right to expect from something like that?
I don't think that's anything you can really answer broadly, because it's going to vary from situation to situation, person to person. But here's the thing, right? I think that in Toy's case, we certainly need more context, because we know his perspective. He wants to be close to his brother. He wants to live with him. I've seen episode 4. But his brother's keeping him at arm's length. But do we know why his brother's doing it? Because I can think of two reasons off the bat why he's doing it. One, he's trying to protect him.
That's what he said at the beginning, I think.
And maybe that's legitimate. Maybe that is genuine. Mm-hmm. Or maybe because he can't be arsed with him. You're a burden on me. Fuck off. You go, you know, look off. You go, you know, live in the attic in the sober shop. Do the P5 lifestyle. Right. I don't give two fucks.
This is what I mean when I say that, like, he's even more similar to Inta than he can see. Because they both have people that are pushing them away.
Absolutely. And as for Inta, like, you know, he's beholden to Kazuki, but in some way he's actually taking Kazuki's place as Haruka's, like, you know...
Yeah.
Older, like, you know, he's taking him out to the fucking family.
I know.
And
just and with the family, spend so much time with that family, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, try and belittle people, I say it's so, like, you know, you're taking someone who's wheelchair bound. That is a, you know, demand on you. It's a, you know, it requires a level of effort and investment. You can't go wandering off.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do anything like that. And Enter's doing that in space of, you know, the actual fucking older brother, be it biological or found family, whatever you want to fucking call it. So, I mean, this is the thing that I love about Sarah Zamai, now that we've, like, 5 episodes in. Like, there's shades and layers to all of the relationships. I mean, it's easy if you watch the first 2 minutes of episode 4, for example, right, Toy's brother, Chiaki, as a fuck. An uncaring, soulless bastard who just murders people for shits and giggles and, you know, could not give less of a crap about his brother than the excrement on his boot. Simple as that. But then you watch it and you realise, look, he has done, is doing dubious shit. But he clearly cares for his brother because he, you know, basically martyrs himself in one form or another.
Mm-hmm.
Protects him.
Yeah. And life really put them into a fucking corner, you know?
it put them through the blender. And Enter, like I said before, yeah, he's done some, you know, less than tasteful shit in terms of Kazuki playing a wooden instrument. Nice one, Enter. You know, you clearly didn't watch, you know, you're clearly not as savvy as you should be.
That's Enter's Twitter display name, is less than tasteful shit, I'm pretty sure.
But, like I said before, when it comes to his sister... The person in his life who he, you know, probably could feel quite envious and even, you know, despondent about, like, oh, fuck it, if something happens to her, fine, karmic destiny, all that. Then he still jumps into the line of fire to save her. As for Kazuki, I mean, well, his complexity is bare boat, like, out there. I mean, let's break it down. He's an adopted son. The first adopted son, I mean, let's even boil it down further, right?
Okay.
This is speculation, really, because this is one of the criticisms I have of this particular episode, in that we don't know enough about Kazuki's adopted parents to actually draw genuine conclusions about his disillusionment with them, because he seems to dislike them in some respects. But we don't know how they've treated him throughout the years. I mean, in the run-up to episode 5, I thought to myself, why is he here, Haruka? And going with the lifelong theory that has now been disproven, I thought, well, it's understandable, you know, if you have a kid who is paralyzed, that they would get more attention than the kid who is not. That doesn't make it right, doesn't make it fair, it doesn't make it equitable, but it's understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that out of the way, I then asked myself, okay, why does Kazuki feel so disconnected from his parents? Or rather, his, you know, adopted parents?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think the show should probably establish this by now. Is it because Haruka's taking all the attention? That can't be true, because it must be relatively recent.
It's because of the fucking grandfather. Right? Your mother was a sloppy woman.
I'm generally surprised he didn't flip him off when, you know, when he was like dying, because he knew that rigor mortis was assessing. They couldn't like, they're like this, like, I can't sort the finger out.
Come on, man. People doing stuff to kids in the show. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
I mean, I hope that funeral was an open casket if he did flip them off as he was dying.
I know.
That would have been awkward.
So, can we, before it passes out of my view too much, Tallulah Bell in chat said, this is a slight change of subject, and we can get back to what you're talking about. I just wanted to address... She says, I don't think Toy wanting his only family member to be in his life is just out of obligation. I don't think he should just cut his brother out of his life.
No!
I don't think... No. I don't think we meant to say that.
I think to put it clearly, what I meant to say was, when you burn the forest down, follow my analogy before, you regrow it. You start again. You don't walk away from it. You don't leave it behind entirely. But sometimes part of being friends, family, lovers, partners, you call it, is sometimes realizing that you need to rebuild the framework on which your relationship works.
That's a really good way to put it, right? I mean, it's like you go from kind of, well, we were born together, to realizing, like, I can choose who I spend my time with and who I love and who I care about. Mm. We got this foundation of time already there, so that's, but why else do I care about this person? Why else do I love this person? Why else do I want to be with this person? And yeah, that you have all that. And I guess, like, how are we talking about obligation with it? I guess just in terms of, like, the life he's choosing to lead, in terms of, like, being a criminal and carrying a gun around, like, I don't know. Where was I trying to go with that? Fucking can't remember. God damn it. Shit. Basically, just echo my point earlier. Like, I'll just repeat it that, like, at what point, you know, does the gratitude that he has for the kind of what his brother did for him go from good for him to, like, bad for him? That's the only thing I wanted to point out. But that
is a fair point, because in the context of the show, like, you know, since the start of the show and not counting the flashbacks, like, Toy's behavior, apart from the fact that he's torturing, well, that was his brother, admittedly, and he was watching, if I recall correctly, like, he's not doing anything too untoward. It's giving him confidence and all that, so that's something, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe this is another thing that might be a little bit flawed in the show, and like, that maybe, you know, if you really peel it away and just boil it down to basics, that, you know, Toy is actually not seemingly in a bad state in his life right now. I don't know. Maybe this will be something that gets unveiled more in time. But yeah, like, I think that, you know, I again really appreciate the show for its complexity of its layers upon which they're all built. Because that's how life works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not as simple as, you know, this is my sister and I've, you know, known her from, you know, the day I was born and I loved her to death and all that.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be little things bumps in the road, things that texture that relationship and make it more complicated.
Yeah. Speaking of complicated... Sorry, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you.
No, I'm done. Carry on.
Okay. Complicated relationships. Speaking of, why... in your opinion, does Kazuki envy Toy?
Well, I think that's fairly pun dry, which is that if Toy wants something, he can take it. And I'm not saying that Kazuki doesn't and can't take it, but rather, like, I think that it's a question of, you know, the will to do so.
Yeah.
I mean, if Toy wanted anything he wanted in the world, because given the fact that his brother has shown him, because of the thing that he's done, he'd probably do that.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, Kazuki did end up stealing that cat. And yes, he's doing the thing where he's cross-dressing as Azu and Sarah. I get that. But even their alliance, he will not. So maybe he's, you know, reflecting on what Toddy's done, given the light of, you know, episode 4, and thinking, wow, I've done some shit. I can cross some boundaries. But could I? I will never cross that. I'll never be as, you know, free,
yeah,
quote unquote, and unrestrained as he is.
Yep. I think that's huge. Because I feel like what I took away from the episode was
in
that.
In fact, yes. Question for you, just to interrupt very
okay.
quickly.
Go ahead.
Maybe this will be a poll as well. Given the circumstances, if he couldn't kidnap Azusa Sarah but could instead murder her, would Kazuki do it?
Oh, God. Oh, boy. That might be a lot more complicated than he's willing to take on.
What? That answer alone speaks volumes.
What were we just talking about, by the way? Why
obligation?
Does he envy him? He's free, right? Because Kazuki is just a prisoner of his own making, when he decides to not go with his birth mother, and then, I guess, changes his mind later. We'll see how that plays out. Like, you could tell in that scene kind of how he was relating, like, the body language and the acting and the way he was talking and the look in his eyes. Like, he really felt a connection with her, like, oh, like, this is special, like, yes. But then he had to pull back, you know, because it's like, I have this obligation. Mm. I have this obligation to Haruka and my other family. And that only continued to grow after Haruka's accident. Like, now he's totally, like, a prisoner of that. And he's, like, a prisoner now of this second life he's made to create, like you said, distance between himself and the situation to kind of sort of pacify his own anxieties and fears about it. Yeah, I don't think he feels free to do particularly anything. He feels like he has to punish himself and keep punishing himself.
Yeah, because he said himself in the first episode he was messed up because he was doing that cross-dressing.
Yeah.
So clearly this is not something that he necessarily enjoys for his own sake. I mean, again, with the massive fucking caveat that I am a, you know, cue ball looking cishet motherfucker who doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, I don't get the impression that this is a dysphoria kind of thing and that he might potentially be leaning into, you know, change gender or anything like that. Again, talking out my ass here because I don't know what I'm talking about because of my inherent attributes. But clearly, from what I understand, from what I've seen in the show, he doesn't like doing that. Given the circumstance, he wouldn't do that.
He may like it, but I don't think he would have. It's like, now that he's doing it, he might like it, but he probably didn't like the idea of it. I don't know. Who knows? It's speculation.
Well, here's the thing, right? I just want to speak very briefly about the direction again. So when Kazuki loses the wig, I thought this was genius, actually. I thought this was absolute genius in terms of how it displayed him as a person. Because he essentially has been living two lives. He's been living the life of the fake Azusa Sarah as himself. And then when he stood in front of Kepi's shrine, that's when he becomes the gestalt of them too.
Right.
We see a man divided between two identities.
Mm.
And bear in mind what happened in episode 4 with him echoing the Deesh mannerism, adding them at the end. He was very natural at that.
Really inhabited the character. Which I loved. Exactly. I loved him, like, going up and hugging Toy and saying Deesh, like, really just being Sarah. That was great.
Exactly. Exactly. So, like, I appreciate the complexity of which that's being delivered. And at the same time, like, you know, sorry, I've lost my train of thought. This is what I get for drinking vodka.
This is happening a lot on the stream. Sorry, everybody. We can't keep our ideas straight.
So, Yeah, like, no, I really like that element that, you know, he clearly visually displayed him as a kind of, like, split personality kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And who could say if that'll be resolved in? In fact, that's the thing I was going to predict as well. Throwing this prediction out there, final boss, quote-unquote, of this particular show will be Azusa Sam.
Could, yeah, could very well be.
Well, think of it this way. Who's providing all of the material, so to speak, quote-unquote, for the Autocops? Azusa Sarah. She's the root cause of it.
Would seem that way, yeah.
So she's removed. Then, obviously, you know, they can't have their desires fed.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Yeah, there's no desire template set for everyone else, yeah. You know?
And if she were raised in the same manner as, say, you know, the rest of the characters who were caught by the Autocops, like, Azusa Sarah is, at least for Haruka and Kazuki, the thing that binds them together.
Mm-hmm.
The barrier, even, that they put between each other.
Yeah.
So if she was gone, that would bring them together.
That's really interesting. Yeah, and you think about, like, the implications for this show if Sarah were to go away. What is everyone supposed to desire? And what does that say about...
Well, then, it's like dictated to many more, yeah.
What does that say about, if, you know... Clearly, I think this is meant to be, in some sense, a mirror of reality. And so what is it saying about us and our own society and such? Yeah. So, or getting back to Kazuki envying Toy and the freedom. Yeah, I mean, like, I guess you could say, like, Kazuhi doesn't leave because Haruka would be upset, but, like, what evidence is there to show that, like, he cares that much about that? You know what I mean? Like, he said, like, oh, I do this charade with the Sarah thing. It was really for me. I hate Haruka. He's clearly deeply resentful of Haruka. I mean, at one point when they were younger, I think, he had a, like, kind of a more healthy, loving, conventional relationship with him, and then after the fucking old man died, and he learned he was adopted, like, that threw all that into a tailspin, and it's colored the way he's seen everything. Like, Haruka is mom and dad's real kid, and I'm the fake kid. Like, it yeah. created that distance there, and you know, that resentment has only continued to grow. And, I mean, it's like, it reminded me some of, like, you know, like when you're... So my mom had to take care of my grandmother in her, like, later in life, and my grandmother couldn't really do anything for herself. And it's like one of those things where you love the other person, so you're going to do all this for them because you love them. But the sacrifice and, like, the toll on your own mental well-being and all the time it takes can create some pretty deep resentment for the person that you're taking care of. And I think that those kind of dual opposing feelings are at war in Kazuki. And not to mention, like, so on top of all that, you add the final element to the cocktail of Kazuki feels like he's the reason that Haruka has become paralyzed, and he feels like, I think the fact that no one will blame him or punish him for it makes him feel like almost like a weird dissociation with reality. You know what I mean? Because he's like, I obviously did it. I obviously should be punished. Why is no one punishing me? Like, why isn't this happening? This is what should happen. And it's not happening, and it just, I think, feeds into this disconnect he feels with everything in his life, and why he wants to punish himself. I don't know, like, what is he looking for, I wonder? Like, where, like, what's the end point? Maybe there's not one. Maybe it's just how he sort of sees himself living at the minute.
It's hard because we're only halfway through the show if you want to round down. And I think this is going to take a lot of soul searching on his part. I mean, the thing is, the secret's out. That's it. There's no turning that clock back. They will return to their human forms at some point, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But one has to ask the question, like, will the time between in which they, you know, between now and when that happens, be the time in which Kazuki, you know, realizes or understands how he has to, you know, talk to Harrograph the facts? And I'm not saying they necessarily, you know, have the right answer, just at least it comes to understanding. It's difficult, man. Like, I don't think even they know.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, the point which... I mean, it's like I said, you know, the whole Azusa Farah thing disappearing. If she disappeared, it would make life, it would rewrite, you know, life to be a lot easier for them. But I'm also of the opinion that maybe the thing that he needs to realize is that he can shed that skin that he's been wearing, that persona, that costume, and just be a fucking brother. He already made the decision, after all, to stick with that fake family, quote-unquote, is. And then maybe you turned on that because he's indecisive. Not an understandable thing
for
a kid that age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you flip-flop back and forth. I do all the time on serious stuff, and I'm like twice his fucking age. So, I know, it's... Basically, I think the answer to that question is going to be, watch more of the show, damn it.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder. I mean, clearly at bottom, he's got some love for Haru. He's got to. I feel like, you know, even though I was saying there's that sense of obligation, and that's the chief reason why he stayed with his adoptive family. There's got to be more than that, but I don't know if he believes that, you know, that's the case. Because at some point in the show, I think this near the beginning of this episode, he says, Haruka and I are connected even though it's not real. Like, I thought that was a really interesting line. Hmm. Like,
well, it begs the question, like, at what point, you know, like, I've said to you before, like, that in The Promised Neverland, that fake experiences still have genuine value.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So... I can totally see, for example, a scene later on in this show's run where Haruka, in his own 12 or 10-year-old or 8-year-old way, however old he is, says, okay, look, you did a shitty thing, but you did it because you cared. And that's fine. Indeed, we even kind of got that with the fact that he was calling after him after the fact when he was running away.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Still wanted to see him.
Yeah. So maybe even, you know, this is the point where the fake connections and, you know, false, you know, relationships or relationships that are labored under a fiction of some sort still have value.
Yeah, I think that would be a good lesson. Like, not to undercut completely those kind of connections and experiences, because those are increasingly becoming what people have and what's normal.
Indeed. So,
So you've already talked about why you thought Kazu lost to the Kappa zombie and what was different. So we've talked about that. Well, I don't even want to know if I want to ask this next question I have. Do you have anything else in your notes?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Oh, boy. I don't feel like I said anything I wanted to say or came to any conclusions. The whole thing feels rather aporetic, which is, I guess, fitting about a show regarding
things
coming through tight openings.
I'm gonna just pretend that you didn't pretend to be the TSA there, and I'm gonna, you know, talk about something else instead. Which is say that this is the thing about doing this format, like, we can talk week on week about it. We can understand as it unfolds, but, like, more so than other shows I think we've covered on stream before, like, Ikuhara's, like, works, and this one in particular, lends itself to allowing a gradual failing, like dismantling a Matryoshka doll.
Right.
So, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't really have much else to add than that. So, I suppose now is the time that we can rate the episode if we're up for
okay.
it. Do you want to add anything else, Doc?
No, we can. We can rate. I guess. Well, did your
go on, you want to ask me that question? You want to ask that question? Try me.
Well, did your this is a different one? Did your ranking of the boys change at all these past couple weeks? If you had to rank the protagonists in order of best boydom,
I'm just gonna provide the cop out answer on this, which is to say it's an apple to an orange to a lemon. They're all fucked, just in their own way.
They are. That is true. But they all. But we can all see like why, or I guess we can all empathize to a greater or lesser extent.
Well, that's it. Like
you know,
this is like I said to you before. Like we have been given context on all of them that leads us to understand, even if they don't agree with their actions. Like I wouldn't agree, for example, with Toy murdering that guy. Not that
Jesus.
I can immediately,
yeah.
Not that I can immediately think of you know an Alcesa's solution, but it solved the issue nonetheless. So that's fine. Same with Enter, like I said previously. Clearly got some issues, does some stupid shit, but comes through in the end for his sister in particular. Kazuki, his, you know, whole Azusa Sara thing is a very twisted form of love for his younger brother. He would never probably explain it in those terms, but that is true. So, ultimately, I emphasize with all of them, I understand why they did it, why they did the various things they did. But that doesn't make them right. But as I've told you before, like, I think that it's probably very, you know, understandable that people, both in real life and in fiction, fuck up before they do right.
Especially, like, I mean, kids, right? Like, just bundles of emotions and hormones.
Well, this is why I said to you about things like Stoner and all the various media that we talk about.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to forget that these are kids.
Yeah.
And they're kids younger than what we're used to in these shows, which is usually around the 16 mark.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's very easy for us as adults who have, again, the time behind us, you know, the wisdom and experience. Granted, I'm still kind of deficient. I'm working on it. Trust me on that. But,
Ashlinks was 17. Hashtag never forget.
Exactly. So, my point being is that this is, again, another reason why I really like Sirens of Mine. Like, there are shows that I've watched in my time, like both live action and animated, be it from East or West, where varying degrees they establish adequate motivations and reasons why the characters act as they do, even if they do horrible things.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing. Like, it's not as simple as black and white. It's not as simple as, you know, this person good, this person bad. When this person is great, and they're sat in the middle, and, it, you know, people can argue for days on end about whether they were right or wrong. That, to me, is the mark of good fiction.
Yes. I'm okay with some moral black and whiteness from time to time.
There are times and places for it, I will concede that. Maybe I was being too broad on the statement, but, yeah.
So, I did forget, in chat here, oh my, Zohar, G?
Zohar?
Yes, talks about the Haruka sachet, and Haruka being a he, by the way, that he had, you know, at one point, it was post-credits where Kazuki was like, why does Haruka have a sachet that has mom's smell? What the fuck is happening there? Like, are they actually both adopted brother? Like, you know, there's... Yeah, I mean, who knows where this could go, right? This could go a million different places, but that was
next time,
crazy.
Sirens of Mine.
Yes, as our anime soap opera turns.
I mean, like, I need to do that in the Batman 1960 show, which is next time on Sirens of Mine. Biff, wham.
Da, 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 da. Yeah,
Kazuki.
That was craziness. I both Both of the last post-credit sequences I have not been prepared for, so I don't know what next week will have in store for us.
We will see. We will see.
I'm going to say Toy is my number one at the minute for
wow,
Bestie.
The murderer.
The most, I think easily the most, like, I mean, and I have empathy for all of them, but for me, Toy is, like, the most sympathetic. I mean, he really does seem like,
he's got,
you know,
the
his
least
hand was very forced.
Baggage.
Yeah, his hand was so forced. And so yeah, for me, he's ranking at the top of the list. And then
what does that say about the show where you feel that way, though?
I know.
And that's not criticism, by the way. That's me actually applauding it, mm-hmm. where the complexity of the characters and their personalities and their histories make you rank the guy who murdered another guy as the best person. Holy shit.
The inverse relationship with the severity of the crime and the human, like how you feel about the human.
Fuck, I don't know. Yeah, all right, so let's rate the episodes anyway. Let's send this over.
Well, man, this is tough.
I can lead it if you want.
Okay, well, I guess I think I'll give them both, like, 4.5, 4.75, like, they were both extremely good, extremely engaging for different reasons. Like, I loved everything about Toy's backstory and how it was presented, and just to get to delve deeper into him. But also, that fucking moment in episode 5 when Kazuki's sort of scheme was revealed to all, like, he as fraud was placed, you know, bare on stage before everyone. And I mean, that was just like a gut punch. Like, that's,
yeah,
to feel those raw feelings is like why I like watch things, like why I like,
yeah,
stories.
Exactly,
you know?
exactly.
So I'll give them 4.75 bathwater filled soba bowls out of 5.
Ouch. I'm going to rate the episodes differently. I'm going to give episode 4, which is Toy's episode, I'm going to give that 4.25 CG guns out of 5. And here's the thing, though. Like, it was a damn solid character episode.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't lose its moments of levity. It didn't lose its moments of humor. Like, tonally, it flowed beautifully from one to the other. We've got moments like, you know, where you've got a family who have been destroyed due to, you know, unforeseen circumstances, mixed with, oh, I'm a cross-dressing guy chatting with my friend who's a criminal, and I'm going to flirt with him, and he's going to be embarrassed. And it never felt derogatory. It never felt forced.
Mm.
It, like, that's the beauty of the writing in this show. It just flows from one thing to another without being awkward. And I'm going to give the following episode 4.5 manages locked in the toilet out of 5. And this is the thing, right?
God.
I again bring up the point I said before where I thought to myself,
why is Toy so bad at kidnapping?
This, well, there's that. The chip that they had in their hand of, you know, Kazuki revealing or being revealed to Haruka that he has been cosplaying or pretending to be Azusa Sarah. When do you cash that in? When do you gamble that moment? And for me, not only did they gamble it early, but it paid off so magnificently. I mean, we got to understand Kazuki's motivations more from this as a result. Be it through what he says to his fellows or what we see through the flashbacks. It was massively built up to. But at the same time, like I said before, the episode does not lose its sense of fun. I laughed my ass off at Toy trying to keep Azusa Sarah under control. That was some good shit. Mm-hmm. That was slapstick. But it didn't actually come out of place, even when he's sticking fucking swords into her, out of nowhere. That entire subsection, that scene, would have been excised, and you wouldn't have lost any sort of sense from it, because it doesn't make sense, even in context. But it was super fucking good. And again, that's what I'll credit Sam's my fault. If I had one complaint, again, like I say, I just wish there had been more context delivered on the relationship between Kazuki and his adopted parents. Because his dislike of them isn't anywhere near fleshed out enough to justify his dislike thereof.
Right.
Like, this is why I said before, like, if Harrica's issue of paraplegia had been lifelong, I could immediately rationalize that in my own head as an audience member, why that was. Because it's easy to understand why all the child would be, you know, hateful of a younger one who has a disability.
Yeah.
Not that makes it right.
Right. Here's what we do see. I mean, we see Kazuki putting distance between himself and his adopted parents. We don't see them trying to close the distance at all, which I think is telling.
That's true, but we have so little time with...
That's true.
Yes, we have so little time with them that I can't presume that's just be their default state.
Yeah.
I don't know how they would have done it differently. And
yeah, and I mean, you want to give your kids space at times. You know, being too involved and active and all in their stuff is not the way to go either.
Yeah, and on top of that, if it is legitimately the case that they were being neglectful to him for whatever reason, that's fine as far as narrative goes. Like, you could do anything in a narrative. Like, you can have characters do horrific things if it's in service of a story that justifies the action. So that, you know, being the thing is fine. But we spent so little time with the family beyond how it relates to Harrica specifically and not to Kazuki, that that felt lacking to me. But given how quickly we progress things, and again, I'm glad that Ikuhara cashed that chip in early.
Yeah.
So we can now, because as much as it would have been a thing to, you know, have Kazuki reveal to Harrica at the end of the show that, oh yeah, I've been, you know, pretending to be Zuzusara, doing it early opens up a lot of opportunities going forward for good storytelling and good drama.
Yes. Didn't...
It's not... There's no clean win here. There's no 5 out of 5 answer. But I'm glad that they did what they did.
Yeah, it... They could have treaded water. And it didn't. They didn't do that. Now, I feel like you've got probably 2 more, like, character episodes. That you should, I mean, unless you want to do 2 character episodes per boy, which I don't necessarily think they have to do, like, but I think you do need 1 for the Otter Cops, at least 1, and I think you need probably 1 for the Kappas, Kepi and Sarah,
definitely
1 each. So, like, you got 2 or 3 there that you've got to take care of, and then the other time you got to, maybe you could squeeze in more character episodes, but I think, I don't know, like, that's not that much time left to, like, move the story forward to some sort of resolution. Which I guess has been the knock with the more recent Ikuhara offerings, is that the landing might not have been stuck as well as the beginning and the middle parts. But we'll see.
I'm happy to see how it goes, because, like, these 5 episodes thus far have been all very strong.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to put my faith in it that they will stick the landing.
Okay, let me revisit Twitter really fast here before we sign off. So
can I just say, I was visiting Twitter before, so you have a tweet out about if I was pissed by the start of the stream. That is true now, but at the start, not so. People still believed it, so thanks, folks. And secondly, the thing that made me chuckle was also, should we buy him a bath? So basically, if you're new to Warrior Death Show, you probably think I'm some sort of unwashed, unvarnished fucking hobo who spends his time picking out of a brown paper bag. And that's not true. I'm an unwashed, unvarnished hobo who spends his time drinking outside of a sign. Get it right.
That's right. Details are very important to us here. So, the polls thus far. Did Shadon start episode 4 or 5 stream drunk?
You spelled drunk wrong, by the way. I saw that.
It's spelled correctly.
Turnt.
Yeah, turnt.
Turnt.
Yeah.
What the fuck is turnt?
Turnt, that you're pissed, right? That you're fucking... That you're wasted, that you're drunk.
Oh, man.
80% so far in early days say you're turnt. Should we buy Shadana? Should we hashtag buy Shadana bath? Now is leading early days with 71%.
If that wins, I'm signing a GoFundMe.
You should. And did you have to pause episode 5 when the shit really hit the fan? Right now, again, it's very early. You have a whole week left to vote. at Watery Death Show on Twitter. 83% say no, they didn't have to pause. In fact, they eat the drama. They eat it up like breakfast cereal in the morning. So I will be voting staunchly in the other camp later today for that. And those are the polls.
Indeed. Thank you very much, everyone, for taking part in those.
Yep.
So let's wrap up then. If you've already done so, feel free to subscribe to us on SoundCloud, on iTunes, on YouTube. Mm-hmm. This is the first time, by the way, I believe that we've been broadcasting both on YouTube and Twitch simultaneously. So I hope you've all enjoyed it, whether, you know, platform you might be watching it on.
Yeah, I saw a person on Twitch at the beginning, but I haven't seen them in a while. Hello. Thank you.
I think they migrated over.
Okay. So, I'm going to... The way I have chat now, I can't actually participate in it. So I've been trying to address comments that have come up as they come up. But I don't know. Maybe we'll work that out. Maybe we won't. Who can say?
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I just want to say, if you did enjoy this stream and you've enjoyed our works, please do take time to leave us both a rating and a review on iTunes or SoundCloud with it. Forum, you get the chance to do so. It helps our discoverability. We would immensely appreciate. But otherwise, to our audience, thank you all so much for joining us this evening. For however long you may have joined us for, again, always good to have people of all shapes and colours, come join us and, offer their opinions. We will be back. It will not be next week, unfortunately, because I'm on a stag do next weekend.
Oh, congrats, I guess.
I'm going to be in Dublin, so I'm going to be looking up to the fuck. So probably the Monday or the Tuesday of the week after when we'll cover Sirens of Mai episode 6. I hope you've all enjoyed it anyways, and I hope you all have a fantastic weekend. Do you have anything else you want, Doc?
Yeah, just a future plug. This past weekend I recorded with our favorite podcast buds, the Anime is Lit duo. Danny and Kay.
Big shout out to them. I got to do the interview ride with both of them, mm-hmm. and also with Embrace Concepts. Mm-hmm. Bethany, I believe her name. I'm going to misremember her name, and she's probably going to stab me for that. But anyway, I'm so glad that both of them are getting back into doing podcasting because they are some of the smartest and kindest people in the anime podcasting circles I know. If you're not subscribed to them already, I'm going to bitch slap you side of the face.
Sort
your life out. Subscribe to Anime is Lit. Listen to their stuff. They're both fantastic.
Yeah, including that Mage's Bride show. This will be the fourth time that at least one of us has teamed up with them to do a show. It was us three and Mark from Oh No Anime.
Shout out to Mark.
Who is a super cool guy. We talked about Mob Psycho 100 and 200. So
thank you. I'm glad you getting the lingo.
I did. So if you want to hear our thoughts about that, it was very deep dive into the whole thing. We were talking about production stuff. I was talking about Martin Buber and sketching his existential theory on top of Mob Psycho. We were talking a lot about Reagan. Is Reagan good? Is he bad? Who can say? We talked about Reagan the sex symbol. We were all over the place. So, look
was
out
it,
for
was
that.
Was it Eugene Sylvester who came up with that?
No, I can't remember. But it was an Anime News Network person who I think coined the phrase. But I had so much fun. I don't know when it's going to come out. The raw recording is 5 hours. So, but just, that'll be in our feed and that'll be in the Anime is Lit feed. I would say subscribe to that. Subscribe to both. And get that. Also, thank you, Poke Emblem. I have not seen you around before, but thank you for the compliments on our
Indeed, thank you.
Our humble pod. Hopefully we can continue to deliver the nice podcastness for you in future.
Indeed.
I think that's all. I think that's all I got. I hope
that's
you
fair.
Know we're potting on a Friday, which I always love. I hope everyone has a lovely weekend.
Indeed. So, whatever you may be up to this weekend, folks, stay safe, look after yourselves, have a cracking time. We will indeed be back. We'll catch up with you all on Twitter. We'll let you know when we're back out again. Check out the polls in the meantime. Check out our previous show. Drop us a review or a like if you get the time. But until then, until next time, of course, as we're always very fond of saying here on this particular show, embrace everyone. The end of the universe. Fucking great night.